Second, as far as we is not safe. And I think we should be making as productive a use of that time as possible, 3 hours. We welcome everybody that is here, but we were expecting the Department of Correctional Services, and I have received a list of names. We had also specifically asked for the Office of the Inspecting Judge on one item specifically, and I'm informed that they are here as well. And then we have members of the committee that are going to to interact with your proposed budget, Commissioner. Suffice to say that we had a very intense meeting yesterday. By today you've not received any report from that meeting, then we are going to be very disappointed, because you certainly had a delegation here that was party to that meeting. That's for the for purposes of the committee and others that are here. From the department, we have Mr. Sokela, we have Mr. Modise, we have Ms. Jolingana, Ms. Schreiner, Ms. Motibela, Ms. Masuki, Ms. Moodley, Mr. Rasaroka, Ms. Kumala, Dr. Kusia, Mr. Marake, Mr. Nguvo, Ms. Nchinga, Mr. Namini, Mr. Mbambo, and of course Mr. Moyani. And from the inspecting judge, I think we've got Mr. Raga. Mr. Madiga and Ms. Senzana from the inspecting judge. There's no new members of the committee that you guys don't know. Everybody is known, so we're going to do away with the formalities of introductions. You know everybody else. We have stakeholders here as well. I see Inspecting Judge's office, everybody, Inspecting Judge's office, I see Nicro, and I see the PMG, and Young in Prison. How was that? Everybody else is welcome if we haven't recognized you, we apologize. Commissioner and everybody here, by way of introduction. I think, and then it will probably come out, Commissioner and your team, in the interaction, but I thought it was important to remind you that the Department of Correctional Services, or yourselves as individuals, have one task and one task only, and that is to implement government policy. And that is why we give you money, and that is why we ask you for your scrap plan. You have a task to implement government policy, and nothing else. And therefore, in interrogating your annual performance and interrogating your proposed budget and your stress plan, we are going to ask you on specific line items. what is it that you want to do on specifics. And all that we ask you on specifics must answer really just three broad questions. In answering those, in telling us what are those specific line items, it's going to have to address three broad principles. This money that you're asking for, or this activity that you're telling us you're going to do, is it a constitutional requirement? I said you're not here for yourselves, you're here to implement government policy. So this that you're asking us to approve, whether it is action or money, is it because the Constitution requires of it? You must convince this committee if this activity or this expenditure is a requirement of the Act. When you say to us, please approve this, you should be able to link it to the Act. Because I want to repeat, you're not here for yourself. And the third issue that you're going to have to answer is if this expense or if this activity is in conflict with the Constitution or government policy, why are you asking us to approve it? If it's in conflict with the Constitution or government policy, why are you asking us to approve it? You are aware of the Act. We're hoping that you are au fait with the Constitution. The government policy that we're talking about, in the main, would be talking to things like job creation, government policy of transparency, government policy of accountability, and government policy of anti-corruption. I mean, there are many more, but those are the broad ones that we're going to be looking at. If it's in conflict with our decision on anti-corruption, then you're going to have to answer to us, why must we approve it? If it doesn't talk to job creation, it doesn't talk to accountability and transparency, then you're going to have to explain it. If it's not advancing the Constitution, it's not advancing the Correctional Services Act or the Amendment Act, then why should we approve it? Because you're not here, ladies and gentlemen, to advance your own agenda. So those are going to be what the committee is going to be looking at, I think, when they pose their questions, and that's what we're going to continuously come back to you and say, but if you're asking for this money, how does that advance the Constitution? Or how does that advance the Act? Or how does that counter corruption? We were asked yesterday, is this just an exercise that we do every year? And we can't change it. For the members, Mr. Self and others, we went to do some homework. And we were told, and we're saying it to you now, that we have the right to ask Pravin before this department submits its next budget, be it in October or December next year, we have the right to ask to have sight of that document. And having sight of that document, Mr. Self, we then can turn around and say we don't agree that we should be giving them money for consultants. Or we don't agree we should be giving them that money. And that's how we're going to influence the budget. Directly as this committee. And of course, we said to those that asked us yesterday that we will highlight the things we're unhappy with in the budget speech that we have in a couple of months' time. So we were going to directly be able to influence the budget in those ways. Finally, Commissioner, we in interacting with our stakeholders yesterday, it became very clear to us that we don't want the department to come and give us a a presentation of your, or a verbal of your presentation, because we went through it. There are specific questions that members had identified, and we'll ask them to proceed directly to those questions. And those questions were also shared with your team yesterday, so that you don't feel ambushed. And after that, any other specifics we will deal with. So really, that's how we're going to handle it. We have gone through your presentation for the past 2 weeks. Members might ask for questions of clarity on it. We've gone through your annual performance. We've gone through your strat plan. We'll allow members to ask specific questions. And hopefully, in your presentation, you'll be able to point us to the answers of those questions. On the basis of that, we will write our report. On the basis of that, we will formulate our responses to the debate of the minister on the 16th of May. All right. Having said that, Commissioner, we will allow you a few minutes to, if you so wish, to share with us. Otherwise, we will go directly to members to field questions. But if you would like to have opening remarks, Commissioner, we will afford you an opportunity to have your opening remarks.
Chairperson, members of the Portfolio Committee, good afternoon. It is indeed a pleasure and an honor for us to once again to have this opportunity to interact with yourself. Thank you, sir, for allowing us to make a statement and a remark with respect to the agenda of the day, which refers to our strategic plan. And certainly we have listened very clearly as a collective. And in my decision to bring this team that is here today, it was informed by exactly the issue that you are raising with us today. That we're not here representing ourselves. And I'm not here to represent myself. We're here to represent the department and also to come and talk about the funds and the budget which the taxpayers of this country would like to know how we're going to use that money. And indeed, there is no contradiction between ourselves and yours, that ours is to implement policy of government. And hence, when we as a collective and as a department prepared a strategic plan, it was based on the basis of the fact that we are doing so as a department, not as individuals. We are cognizant of the fact that the department is represented by different branches which represent different spheres of what we're supposed to be doing in a holistic manner. I want to confirm here in this meeting that when we worked on the strategic plan, it was a strategic plan that represents the aspirations in line with the white paper on corruption. And ours is simply to implement as civil servants, but cognizant of the fact that the pillars that we have mentioned are adhered to. One, that indeed the preparation of strategic plan is a constitutional requirement, and it cannot be based on our own individual behavior. Secondly, as you rightfully say, Chairperson, that it is a requirement of the Act, and indeed that it is not in conflict with government policy and the Constitution. We are also cognizant, in order to reiterate what you have said, that it will seek to address the key issues that you have mentioned: job creation, transparency, accountability, anti-corruption. We are here, therefore, in our capacity to represent the department, which is headed by the Minister and the Deputy Minister. We are here to the oversight body of government to give reasons as to how are we going to use the budget that has been allocated to us. We want to take cognizance of chairperson and the presence of stakeholders here. Neutral. The young in prison? Something like that. Young in prison. And other stakeholders perhaps that are here, and also take cognizance of the fact that the office of the inspecting judge is present. We are ready to interact with yourself. We are grateful of the fact that our document has been read and ours is to be able to respond to the issues that emanate from it. I want therefore on behalf of the team and the minister to say we are ready to interact with yourselves as we have been in the past. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Commissioner. Yesterday we were informed that there was a young man that was on parole. He was working somewhere. Somebody from Correctional Services then spoke to, I think it's Young in Prison or somebody like that, and asked for a facilitation of this young man to come and meet with them so that they can clarify that this young man is not contradicting or absconding because he's working. He got to the venue and he was summarily arrested. Before his arrest, he was in a juvenile section. After his arrest, he's in medium B. We asked your departments to notify you, and we ask the inspecting judge to also come back with answers on that, to afford you an opportunity to give your side of your story before we take a decision as a committee, because we had heard it just from, I think it was one of the stakeholders. Our concerns were that if we are saying that people must go on parole and go and work, and then we arrest them knowing that they are employed and so on, what are we saying? That's why we started by saying, are you doing these things to satisfy yourself, or are you doing them in line with the white paper or in line with the constitution? Because if you're not, then you're in trouble. It appeared to us that this was a young man that was working, indeed was on parole, was working, you were aware of it. You then said, no, look, we were about to mark him as having absconded, but now that you come and confirm that indeed he's working and you're the employer, bring him along so that we listen the absconding letter and he can go back and do his work, and he was arrested. And he's sitting in Portsmouth. That's the report we received. We also want to indicate, Commissioner, that this is not something that you heard for the first time yesterday. This committee has been interacting with you probably for the past month on this matter, including the inspecting judge, at least for a month on this matter. And therefore, we said we're not going to wait until you come and see us on the 25th. Today we want an answer. Somebody in this room today, if indeed what we are hearing is correct, somebody today is going to release that guy. If it's correct, somebody is going to release it. If what we're hearing is correct. If it's not correct, then you need to tell us, because we also warn the stakeholders that when they do presentations to us, in our book it becomes public document. So we don't want them to come with hearsay or with things that would create a problem in the eyes of the public. But I can assure you that just reading this document alone raised those concerns with us. So we're going to ask the inspecting judge, and we have received correspondence. Maybe I have. I don't know about the members here. We want you just to give us an update on what this matter is, and we're asking the department to give us an update, and let's take a decision on this matter. Thank you, sir.
Yes, you can read from there, members can hear you.
Thank you, Chairperson, members of the committee and the commissioner and yourself and as well as the NGO president. The inspection briefly, Mr. Smith has indicated that we mailed a report earlier today to Cindy. I don't think copies of it have been made, but we're quite happy that members of the committee have responded as a chronology of the events that had taken place with regard to this particular matter. Very briefly, on the 30th of March, Friday the 30th, very late, the committee secretary, Cindy Bailey, had called our CEO, Mr. Carlson, indicating primarily that this inmate, there were allegations that he had been threatened in prison. On that Friday, the letter is in here, and contacted the organization to inform him that he was being, in the Vader Commons, initiated and needed $300,000 protection money. The organization is concerned for his safety as he was severely assaulted when while he was still incarcerated. The inmate is in an extreme state of panic. The matter was referred to the inspectorate on the 30th of March by the state. What we had immediately done then, our concern was the safety. One of our staff, in the name of Mr. Hinkerman, had gone there on Friday evening to Portsmouth to try and locate the inmate and to ensure his safety. Unfortunately, the officials could not find him for one other reason, that his name had changed and or his prison number that we had was not the prison number that he was currently incarcerated under. The details will appear in the report. We then, on Monday, first thing, deployed Mr. Joseph, whose name you will see in our report. He said, please, you go, but you won't pass it, you may, with regards to the allegation. We got there, and there was similar confusion. And a long time had elapsed before that, at the time, there was some confusion with the other thing's name. Cesar was the common surname, but I think there were two Cesar. That created a little confusion. When the inspector goes, they have a prison number, and they have a name. And actually, to a prison determined by unfortunately, on Monday, there was some confusion and there was an indication that this inmate was in Sunday. I might just add also that all the communication has been copied to the secretary and maybe not that easy with regard to recovering funds. Eventually, on Tuesday, Mr. Madiga, one of our returning to the office, was pictured me and was also on the report. With Ms. Mama Zelana, the IPCB, the Independent Correctional Center visitor, sitting behind me, consulted with the inmate at around about 12. Again, trying to find the inmate was a problem that Ms. Zelana had told me before. Eventually, they found him, and a consultation was then made by Madiga. The inmate then indicated to them that the allegations of rape were false, and he had done so to source money from young people. That's what he had told Mr. Madiga and Ms. Zelana. Of course, the details of that conversation were also appear from the report. We then the question of the also to say that Mr. Dhanaya has told me that and Mr. Manjita, when he consulted with the inmate, he appeared fearful. And of course, the question was why you appear fearful, why you have a fancy life, was also of concern. And confounded to him, it was what they had to do. We have in fact copied liquor. All our correspondents indicating to them that he appears fearful and not trusting of anybody who comes there. And a different environment to a counseling kind of environment to be. But nonetheless, the gist of the consultation we had with Mr. Mandela and the ICCD was that he was not there. It was our first concern from Friday, 30 March until the 2nd of April. We then Mr. Matiga wrote a report which we copied to Yang Prison and Yang Prison had then informed us that there seems to be a miscommunication and some contradiction. And from the inspector's point of view, all we could say and did say is that this is the product of an interview by two people, this is what we said. And then we invited Yang Prison to our office. And due to circumstances, we could not meet Mr. Mandela, but an invitation was made to Yang Prison. The question of parole was also raised, but peripheral to the main issue of state custody at that time, on the 30th. And subsequent to that, we have been in touch with the parole board, in fact not immediately after the consultation. I've also sent a copy of that mail. I'm sorry if I'm not being very detailed, but all the written forms. We also then inquired into the circumstances and the allegations that Yang Prison has made with regard to under what circumstances did we allegedly breach his parole condition, and the complaint of stealth, which he was recommitted. We also contacted the Community Corrections Office, which was playing after parole. Now we've done that on a previous occasion to the parole board, from whom we've not received a reply, and we did that again this morning to Community Corrections. So the question of parole shows us the members of the department. We don't have substantive answers as we sit here with regard to what those allegations are. Suffice to say that what ought to happen and the answers that we ought to get and we're going to get if we're working on from the time of the initial allegations, as I said, that we say something to the parole issue, is that whenever somebody is arrested on the so-called GL6 as it was called, there could be a criminal charge in terms of Section 117, if I remember it correctly, and there should be a hearing, Now whether a hearing has actually taken place, an opportunity to present evidence, etc., I don't think that it happened. Okay, I don't think so, I don't know it, and it hasn't been confirmed either. That would be the one thing.
It's fine. No, that's okay. Mr. Smallberger, this happened in your region. Somebody's out on parole, he's behind bars. Can you tell us the circumstances why he's behind bars?
Just before the small beggar responds, I have your question now. Yeah, I should think it is important we are going to respond to this matter. And I would like to believe that in our response we'll be able to provide the portfolio committee with the full story and only the full story. When we deal with matters of this nature, I want to subscribe from a school of thought that says all the investigations done, we should be able to give this also in writing. so it doesn't end up being a verbal discussion. Because it is easy for us to miss the content and the tone of what is going to be said here. Chairperson, I'm saying this because in the delegation that I elected to bring, Mr. Smallberger was not part thereof. Because the directive that I had is that I'm bringing the team to discuss matters that are here on the table. But when this was brought to our attention, and given the seriousness of the allegations that were to our attention, I felt, Chair, that Mr. Smallberger should be here. I'm saying this so that it should not be seen as if Mr. Smallberger was part of the team. He was not part of this team. It is in relation to the issues that we think, and importantly so that this committee deserves to get the response. And the rightful person is him because he is the de facto head of the region. I also want also to make this request that when issues are raised by our stakeholders, they should also interact with us. And I'm saying this because I would like to make a proposal that going forward, we deal with issues that affect the lives of the inmates appropriately, because you said it very clearly in your opening statement that are we doing these things for ourselves or are we doing them on behalf of government? And therefore, I'm saying this, Chairperson, because when we leave this place here, I hope our stakeholders will interact with us and we should have an opportunity and a forum where in some of these things are dealt with in the manner that they deserve. And I'm saying this in order to give this committee comfort that if something has gone wrong here, somebody is going to be held accountable. And we hold people responsible for these positions that they hold, for reports that are substantive, and they have all the authority that they deserve. I have a copy of the report from Mr. Smallberger. But I want to indicate that what the person, the colleague from Inspecting Judge, which is an independent body altogether, has raised, should also be on record. Because in most cases, some of the allegations are diversion from the reality and the truth. And we end up discussing things that at times are not going to add value to us. I sincerely request, I therefore, with your permission, grant, as you have requested, that Mr. Smallberger be here, that he explains to us what exactly happened and what is it that we need to do going forward. Because it is our duty and our responsibility that inmates should not be harmed once they are in our facility. Because if that is the case where we continue to harm and torture and deprive inmates of the rights that they have, then there is a problem. Some who have not transformed. We still become prisons, not correctional services. But that process of transformation means, therefore, those of us sitting here should take full accountability of what is happening. And therefore, Chairperson, I just wanted to remind this particular aspect. So as you interact, as you rightly say, that he is the head of correctional services in the Western Cape. He ought to know and respond to it. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, National Commissioner. Good afternoon, Chair, honourable members of the Portfolio Committee, NGOs. Chairperson, I will just give a brief summary of the events to see how can we assist the Portfolio Committee to have both sides of what happened with the offender, Aziza. Maybe to start, Chairperson, to say that he was born according to his records on 16 November 1988. He was sentenced on the 2nd of July 2009. By then, he was on the age of 20, and he was admitted at Paulsmoor Medium A, who is incarcerating juvenile offenders. There, he was sentenced for 4 years for robbery. And he was sentenced in terms of Section 2761I of the Criminal Procedure Act. He was then placed out to serve the rest of his sentence in the community as a probationist from the 8th of August 2010 until 1 July 2013. The conditions, just to assist, include inter alia community service of 16 hours per month. He may not leave his managerial districts. House arrest was one of the conditions. He was also prohibited to commit any further crime. His supervision classification was medium. He may not threaten any person based on the crime of robbery. His free time was on Tuesdays, where he was given 6 hours. And then there's a compulsory office visitation once a month. So if I start with the community service, from the 11th of January 2011 up until 19th February 2012, he was already behind with 208 hours of community service. If you add up those violations, you will see it is a huge number. On the 26th of February 2011, there was a visit at his home. 3 minutes past 12 that night, he was not at home. A calling letter was left at the address. The 24th of July, he was visited during daytime. When he was supposed to be at home, he was not there. Another calling letter was left. On the 2nd of August, he was called in and he was given a serious warning to comply with the conditions. The 29th of October, he was visited 4:30 in the afternoon. He was not there. Another calling letter was left. On the 9th of November 2011, he was arrested because he was found outside his managerial district. And there was a recommendation from the supervision committee that he should be incarcerated again. The head of the Community Corrections Office interviewed the offender and he was given another chance, and also his community service was rescheduled so that he can catch up what he was still owing, and that was on the 9th of November 2011. Here on the 4th of February, he was visited 4 minutes past 7 in the evening. He was not at home. Another calling letter was left there. 13 February 2012, another visit. He was not at home. And the people who were staying at that home notified the officials that the person is no more staying there. Nevertheless, another calling letter was left at that home. 5 days later, on 18 February, 4 o'clock, 6 minutes past 4 in the afternoon, he was visited again. They again said he's not staying there anymore. Another calling letter was nevertheless again left there. 19 February 2012, they verified with his community service, and he still did not start with the rescheduled community service after the final warning was given in November 2011. On the 27th of February 2012, a warrant of arrest was issued and given to the Skonde unit to trace him. 6 February, March, the home was visited again, was not there. 12 March, he was not there. 13 March, again he was not there. 21st of March, again he was visited, still not at home, and in all these cases, letters were left at the address. Jefferson, on the 28th of March, the officials received information that this offender was working at the NGO. A certain official called Young in prison and they confirmed that he's indeed there. The official explained that the department is looking for the offender due to serious violations and they will come and arrest him. The discussion with the person of Young in prison goes down to the point that it will be embarrassment if the person is being arrested at work. And there was, according to the information, an agreement that they will bring the person, the offender, the next day to the community corrections office. The person is stating clearly that there was never a promise that he will not be arrested because a warrant of arrest was by then already issued. Chairperson, on the 29th, the offender was brought to the community corrections office. Indeed, they served the warrant that was issued on the 27th of February on the offender, and he was eventually placed before the parole board on the 12th of April, where the parole board have considered the matter, and the parole board agreed and confirmed that indeed, based on the long list of violations and transgressions, he should remain for now in prison. And I need to mention, Chair, that when he was arrested, his age was by now 23, and he could not be sent back to the juvenile prison where he was incarcerated before his release. Subsequently, he was taken to Portsmouth Medium B, where the adults of that age are incarcerated. Chair, the head of community corrections explained also, according to the records, to the NGO, the reasons and what was happening with the offender. Chair, may I also say that the allegation of the initiation was also taken very seriously.
No, thanks, Mr. Smallbacker. Thank you very much. It's fine. Members will, if they want to comment, should comment on it, because we wanted both sides of the story. I don't know if members want to comment on this matter, and we take a decision. Safe to say that I'm not sure, but I would imagine, Commissioner, you received the letter of the NGO. Not the letter, the presentation of the NGO, where this is summarized. And this is what spurred our interest. And really, we want to talk to NGOs here. I'm not sure if they're here and yourselves. That we take these things very seriously. As the committee, we take these things very seriously. So when you do presentations, that they must be as factual as possible, because clearly there's no intermarrying of what is being said here in this report and what Mr. Smallberg is saying. I don't want to get into the investigation. We can do that later. As an example, Mr. Smallberger, they're saying in this thing here that it is appalling that trickery was used to arrest him. You are saying that it was explained to the NGO of all the breaking of offences that you've listed now. So these things are in conflict. But this is the report we get. So these NGOs, when they write these things to us, must understand that we're going to get both sides of the story. So we're not going to get into who's right or who's wrong, but I think it's important that we say that both to yourself and to the NGO. That when we get these things, we take them seriously. But I've noted Maka Gula and I've noted Mamugwenya, so that we can get away from this thing if we think that it's clear. And then Baba Sal.
No, thank you, Chair. Thank you, Chair. Chairperson, I think when the NGO present today, I see that no, what we had is totally, we've been put in the wrong place. They present a long story now, but yesterday they were speaking as if they know things, and it happened. So really, it's uncalled for that the NGO should come and present about the department as if there are some other things that the department didn't do correct. Then the question to me, how can we come to trust the NGO if they report the cases like this in us? And then here's the department, we get it from the sources. And now they're giving us the report, it's too long, and the matter when he explained, it's too long. But yesterday he said, no, this person was given the parole, and then we breached the parole, and then there was a problem. And then we swear, as members of committee, said, no, the department, if they did that, they are wrong. That's why we said, no, this matter should be first speaking about it here. So now, really, I started to doubt if the NGOs will come and lie on us, will come and lie. They don't have to do that. They don't have to do that. They don't have to do that. It's wrong. Now, even no matter they can explain anything, but because of the report that they are giving us, it's different to what they told us yesterday, not even last week. Now there are some dates, some of the dates are long overdue. They were supposed to tell us the whole information, but they tell us this yesterday. It's wrong, Chairperson. And I think we don't have to proceed with the matter. There are a lot of things to do. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I think that we need to do, as Commissioner has said, that this matter was supposed to be communicated with them. Seeing that when this issue comes here, come with a one voice collectively, because I believe that the report, as they're writing like this, Chair, is here because they want us to assist them. But if, Chair, the report is going to come to us, and as in our amaqiniso, it's a challenge to us. So I think the procedure needs to go to the commissioner first before they come to us, because now we look like Tina, we are police, whereby a person come and raise the statement, and the some statements are gonna sequel right. And sitting the footy tina we are judge foot, of which is not right. We need to work together, Nama public servant. We need to work together with the what they call it?
NGOs.
Together we need to work together. Mama Bonaga Ruti Abane da better than other ones. But for all of us to save our country, we need to work together. Because now when you're listening to this report and listening to the response that is coming from the correctional state, what the correctional state is saying to us, the department, is what we're expecting them to do. We were passing these laws to say this is the parole board policy, and this policy must go like this. And the correctional service is aligning that procedure as we know that it must be. But now the report is coming with something that is not as satisfying us, Chairperson. I think both teams need to go to the commissioner. And when they come to us, they must come to us here with a collective report. Because even inmates themselves, Chairperson, I know I'm something again about showing this kind of thing in the desert. But I don't want us always to believe on them. They are lying. Some of the things that they talk about, they lie. I said yesterday, we've got long work to do, Chairperson, in terms of the parole, in terms of the community itself. They don't understand. I make examples. I used to make examples with my neighbor, whereby his child was out with parole. But the mother didn't understand that when his child is out in parole, the sentence is not finished. That's the problem, because if community understands, Chairperson, the meaning of parole. We are going to get help from the community, because the mother will understand that this child, the parole is not ending. And the NGOs also, they must assist us in terms of that. But now, if we are going to get report like this, that doesn't show us which, Bona, when this child told them that I'm in parole, what do they do? Are they taking everything? The NGOs. Mama Tata Mzana or Pumenge Parole. Ubuti, okay, yes, they can say this child must go to the police to report. Or how is the parole a long kwakanjani a kai to assist this child Ubuti Angabuyeli a strong way. They've got responsibility themselves. As the family got responsibility. That's why they sign. The family, they sign to say, I'm going to look after this child. But once the child is out, it's our responsibility again as correctional service. The family doesn't care. They say, Mdanamu Pumi. The NGO, they said, I'm going to out. Then some parents is a NGO. But not following the procedure of Fanele Island in terms of the correctional, in terms of IPARO. Say, I'm not happy about this report. For now, Chair, I don't know who's in this house, who is wrong, who is right. I'm not happy at all about the report that is coming from the NGO. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you,
Chair. I'd like to come at this thing from a slightly different perspective if I can, and I'd like to thank the department for the explanation. And I mean, we all of us get a lot of complaints from a lot of inmates. And ordinarily, the way to deal with those is to refer them to the department for an explanation in the first instance, which is what we normally do. But in the Strat Plan, one of the key aspects of the Strat Plan is that offenders are held in safe, secure, and humane custody. There are, from the performance indicators, the historical performance indicators that are contained in the annual performance plan, already 317 alleged assault per 10,000 inmates. This man, no matter what went on before, did not feel safe when he was sent to Polesmore Medium B. He said to the inspecting judge Scott that he wanted to make all the necessary arrangements for self-preservation, which included bribing presumably somebody to look after him. Now, the much more fundamental question that I want to ask is, where are we on the issue of achieving the objective that if all offenders are held in safe, secure, and humane conditions that make it impossible or make it unnecessary for somebody to find 300 rand? And for every, I mean, I've got a complaint here which the commissioner is about to get, and they watch the space. Of an inmate in Johannesburg, or in Vereeniging rather, been raped 3 times. In one occasion, the inmate who raped him was sentenced to a further 5 years. So it happened. I mean, it's not a story he made up. So, I mean, I'd really like to address that aspect of the thing rather than who said what and why it was said and why the person was arrested and how he was arrested.
All right. We will allow you to respond. We notice Babanguni, and then Babanjo will be the last, and we'll ask you to respond so that you can get away from this and deal with the real person. Honorable
Nguni. Thanks, Chairperson. I want to come from a perspective that says our role as MPs. Our role is oversight. Mostly intervention. We are intervening on a situation. But when the other side is not coming in the party with sufficient information, you are unable to intervene properly. In this case, I think if you read the department, it operates like an open door approach. Their doors are open for being approached on various matters. I think they recognize there's a mistake somewhere. The young in prison are recognized as a legitimate NGO, which from time to time they can speak to the department on matters that they feel they are not comfortable with. But when they are not actually getting the necessary response, that is when we come in and say, no, the young inmates have raised these issues, and these are the proofs that they are submitting to show that they wrote letters raising their concerns with the department. The department is not responding. Now, it is when we come in and say, the department, it is wrong for you to keep quiet when people are raising this kind of issues. But in this case, there is nothing that tangible that we can present here that the young inmates can present in front of us and say, we tried it, number one, we tried number two, number three or so. That's why we came to Parliament now to request the intervention from Parliament. At this stage, I think the young inmates must approach the department on all issues. We are no longer interested in talking about issues that come from NGO which were not presented to the department first, and then the department rejects them. And then from there, from our little knowledge, from a question of fairness, we will definitely take the matter up if it does reasonably make sense. It must make sense that you can't lock up a prisoner who has been working and fairly speaking, this person is rehabilitated, if you may use those words, and suddenly now he's back in prison. Therefore, we can't keep quiet around those things. Our intention is to assist the department to implement its program in its strategic plan. Thank you, Chair.
Chairperson, I think we must be just direct to this. Thank you, Chairperson, for the opportunity that you gave me. If we are speaking directly to this issue, I don't want to speak about general issues now. I'm speaking directly to this issue. If we are speaking directly to this issue, now we have got two statements. The statement of the NGO and the statement from the department. Now, if you weigh these two, you will see that there is a problem in between. Now, who was supposed to consult who? Was the department supposed to release a person and not to look after a person that was released on parole? The answer is no. Was the department wrong for incarcerating a person when they were looking for him for quite a few days? The answer is yes. They were right to incarcerate that person because they find him. Lastly, was the report that came to the committee factual? The answer is around about 70% of it, not 100%, because there are dates that have been featured in. If you see the report and you see the dates and you see everything that is put on the table. Now, if you want to take a decision on the matter, you're taking a decision on those facts. Now, the fact is that, do we find the department wrongly by incarcerating a person when they were looking for Smith for all these years when he was released on parole? I'm using Smith as an example. For all these years, we were looking for him and we couldn't find him. Are we wrong in incarcerating him when we find him? The answer is no. They're right, because this is their job, because the guy was out. But if there was a problem of Smith within the department that caused him not to go back or not to report of what has happened, what did Smith do in order for him to be known, to know exactly what is happening? That's a problem we are facing. That is why I'm saying, Chairperson, we may say that we can take this thing out and throw it out of this committee today. But we have a problem. A problem will say, Nguni supposed to say to the department, this is my problem. And if the department is not responding as Nguni was saying, to the problem, and then the problem must be to the NGOs. The NGOs speak to the department. And if the department don't do that, and then the last point is yourself, sir. Because if it crosses that line, if it doesn't go towards that line, the protocol, if there is no protocol within the NGOs and the department and the people who are incarcerated, then we have a problem, because you will be flooded with all sorts of things. At the end of the day, people will make you a fool. At the end of the day, that's where my problem lies. There is somebody who have broken the protocol. That protocol has to be placed at the door of all these three people. That is a person who is incarcerated. He has a right to go to the department, and the department reject it or accept it, and then go to the NGO. The NGO has a right to go to the department, and the department must consult with the NGOs because they are there to assist. And the department must take a decision. And then, if the department does not take a decision, then the NGO must come to you. But if the NGO and the person who is in incarceration broke the law or break the rule, therefore you will be in problems, chairperson, because you will always find these problems every now and then. Thank you.
I know you want to respond, Commissioner. I know that young minister also, you know. I'm not sure that this is the appropriate forum to do that, because we've come here for the debate. Can I suggest, Commissioner, because they're here behind you, that you guys sit down at some point and do what Baba and Tofu say. Just get all your facts together and whatever. We'll continue to be open to everybody. If you are unhappy as the NGO, if you're unhappy as the commissioner, then you'll have to come back to us. Okay. So for now, we will allow it to go in that fashion. Because once we open it up to one, then we must open it up to the other person, and we really don't have too much time. But I thought it was important that we raise it so that everybody understands that matters that come to Cindy will be dealt. And hopefully, as Baba Ndlovu is now saying, Cindy, our first response is going to be, have you spoken to the commissioner or to the department? Has the department rejected your story? And then we will intervene. Because that's what I seem to be getting from members, that we will intervene as the last arbiter, because we get flooded with information. So you will continue to get them that says, look, this is coming to us, but we'd expect you then to say to Cindy that we are going to get into touch with the NGO or with Mr. Isop in Leo Kop or whatever the case might be. Thank you very much. On all sorts of matters, it's a free for all commissioner. What we'll do is we'll take four or five questions and then we'll allow you to respond, or do we want to deal with one individual at a time? But we'll see. Okay. We will start with Munir Abraham. Then self, everybody will be allowed at least two questions, three at the most. Abraham and self, and then Makakula. Gwenya, and then we will ask you guys to respond. Munir Abraham.
Thank you, Chair. I'm concerned that if one looks at the various programs, previously there were seven, and now the department seems to have reduced that to five different programs. And it is necessary that the department give us their rationale behind why they reduced from seven to five. Secondly, Chairperson, if one looks at the core functions of the department, one gets the impression that, we say in Afrikaans, care, social reintegration, those issues seem to be sucking the back teeth of the cow. They're not getting sufficient milk. And if they don't get sufficient milk, Chair, they will not be able to deliver. And yet, Chairperson, I want to specifically speak about corrections, rehabilitation, care, social reintegration, development to an extent. If one looks at the figures that are projected over the next couple of years, there is a steady decline. It might sometimes be said that it is a minute percentage, but there's a steady decline. And we need an explanation. That means, Chairperson, that we are actually moving away from constitutional prescripts as well as the overall strategic plan of the department. We need to have an answer. The third one here, Chairperson, I won't take another one now, is the fact that when we are told that in the two current PPP prisons, the guesstimated cost per prisoner per day is 399 rand, call it 400. But now let us also remember that those inmates are actually kept busy for a significant portion of the 24 hours that the Lord gives us. They are busy with some other form of activity. Against what I'm made to understand, according to your estimated costs in our facilities, it is now roughly 313 rand per inmate per day. The problem I have with this, Chairperson, is that we have been arguing that it is cheaper for us to have our own facilities and it'll be a major saving on cost. Secondly, that we don't feel very happy to source out a security function. My problem here, Chairperson, is that whilst the inmates in our facilities are not constructively engaged for the bulk of the 24 hours, we are coming very close to what it costs in a PPP. And you need to explain this, because this is not a tenable situation. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Mr. Sal.
Thank you very much, Chair. I'll start with your opening remarks, which was that the budget must be aligned, obviously, to the Act. And clearly, the centerpiece of the Act is that offenders should be rehabilitated while they stay in prison. Now, there's some good news, in the annual performance plan, and that those two bits of really good news is, firstly, the undertaking now to measure the monitoring of repeat offenders, because clearly, if people repeat offend, then they're not being rehabilitated in prison. And that really is very, very good news. But I'd just like to ask a couple of questions around some of the indicators that are contained in this document. And having said that, it's very, very difficult every year to compare this document with last year's document to make sure that they're actually making progress, because the measurements change, the indicators change, and sometimes the figures change in a way that reminds me a bit of Chinese arithmetic. But let me just hone in on a couple of these. On page 14 of this document, there is a long section that relates to the enhanced African agenda, the sustainable development on security and stability. And in answer to your question, I would ask where that fits in with the core mandate of the department, since, for example, The target year 2, at the bottom of page 14, talks about a partnership with Southern Sudan. Well, I'm delighted that we're having a partnership with Southern Sudan, but I hardly think it's core business of the department. In my view, unless the... unless the goal of cooperation through this association is to result in a prisoner transfer agreement that is going to ensure that our prisons get depopulated by the transfer of prisons back to home countries, I question what the relevance of much of this activity is about. Secondly, Chair, on page 32 of the document, one reads about the number of centres registered as full-time schools by the Department of Basic Education. Again, very commendable. We're trying to get people educated. But then it talks about we're moving from 2 full-time schools to 3, 2 to 6 full-time schools. Then it goes from 11, 8, 8, 8, 11, 13. I don't understand those figures, and I need some explanation about how those figures are arrived at, because they seem to go up and down as we go along the years or months. And then finally, Chair, on page 20 of this document, we talk about the grievance procedures, and the target is set there for target year 1, 2012-13, all grievances finalized within 30 days. At the moment, of the 471 people on suspension, 273 of them exceed 30 days. So I tell you what, I'm going to make a promise. I'm going to buy the commissioner a cake if that performance indicator is reached in 2012-13.
I thank you, Mr. Sayer. The Honourable Makakula.
Thank you, Chairperson. I don't have money to buy a cake, so I won't buy for you, Commissioner.
Yes, buy a cake.
Neither a cook. I'm having this question. My question is, can the department speak about how it will ensure that is it able to provide the service, the services to the mentally ill and the disabled and the other inmate with the special needs? That is my question one. I do have some nice questions. My question two is, in the annual report, performance plan, the target for the DCS is to fill 97% of funded vacant posts. Can the department also provide the committee with the details, plan including time frame, on how the target for the vacant rate will be achieved for the financial year? Another nice question. In this 2011-2012 annual plan, the DCS indicated that the target for 2012-2013 was 9% for vetting of personnel. However, in the 2012-2013 annual plan, the target is not there. Can the department explain this? What is the plan for the vetting for 2012 and 2013 identities.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, mine on the strategy plan, I don't see anything that is talking about the victim. There's a lack of participating by the victims of crime during parole hearing of offenders. And here you remember that we have talked about this a long time, every time, even in our debate. I was thinking that this time this matter is going to appear on the strategic plan, but I don't see anything that is saying anything about them, and I'm worried that how is the department going to get the budget of doing this if it's not on the strategic plan? Thank you, Chairperson.
All right, thank you very much. Next, and others, we will come to the second round. There are quite a few. Let's take these and we'll come back to you in the second round. We'll the first one next. It will be followed by Zobu, and then it will be followed by Clay. Can we take them in this order? Can we ask you guys to deal with it?
Thanks, Chair. I'm going to request my program, my branch heads, who are here to respond to the issues that have been raised by the committee. I just want to respond to one, South Sudan. Perhaps we are victims of our own way of putting things, but it's important that it's raised here. The Department of Correctional Services has a role and responsibility in the continent, similar to the role that our government plays in the continent. As we speak, we are the Secretariat of African Correctional Services in Africa. So we form part of the international dimension with respect to issues of correction. So we're not sitting here as an island. We also have relations with Lesotho, Botswana, Mozambique, and you would recall, members of the Portfolio Committee, that last year, if my memory serves me, we had a conference which we hosted commissioners, national commissioners of Southern Africa. So we have a responsibility. Besides an international benchmarking and sharing of experiences, there is, of course, an attempt within government to deal with the issues of interstate transfer of inmates. And therefore, we cannot be divorcing ourselves from this particular incident. As we speak today, there is an interministerial committee that is taking place in Ethiopia, led by DERCO. Government departments are participating. Correctional Services has also been requested to participate in this endeavor. Our main objective is to understand the role of incarceration and also to understand what are the problems in relation to correctional services issues. So we do have a relationship with other international organizations like ICPA. We also have what you call bilateral relations with other agencies all over the world, in the U.S., United Kingdom, Germany, and the like. So what we are emphasizing here is that we also need to grow into inter-African relationship. I was in Nigeria on the 23rd to the 27th of last month, precisely because we've been invited by our sister organization in Nigeria to understand whether we speak from the same perspective when we deal with incarceration of inmates. So I just wanted to blend that. CDC Moodley would be able to interpret extensively on these matters, but my colleagues who are here with me would be able to speak to all the questions raised. Thank you very much.
Can you deal with the first question? You deal with them in the order that they come, and I will remind you about them. The first one is, why have you reduced the program from 7 to 5? What was the rationale, and what is it that... Let's put it to you quite... our concern is that you guys are trying to hide certain things. That's our concern. Prove us wrong. I mean, we're not sure anymore why the facility is now sitting in incarceration. What was the rationale?
Chairperson and honourable members, if I can assist, Over an extended period of time, Treasury has been very critical of our budget program structure, indicating that we had passed through many budget programs, that we had an anomaly of budget programs that only had one sub-program. Corrections budget program, for example, only had one sub-program, which was personal corrections. So we have been under pressure or have been guided, let me put it that way, rather, by Treasury over an extended period of time. In fact, when I joined the department 10 years ago, it was one of the issues that they were concerned about. So there's that dimension that has fed into it. In addition, Treasury had identified concerns in relation to the administration program across all government departments, and they were involved in a process of ensuring that there was a degree of consistency in the way in which the administration program was structured and the sub-programs within the administration program across government departments. That process, they drove in 2010, and the MTF process in the middle of 2010 was the time period at which Treasury wanted to align budget program structures. In addition, we had developed a logic model in 2005-06, and that logic model also then indicated that we should ensure that our budget program structure spoke more directly to the logic of our department. The restructuring of our budget programs was therefore an issue that we dealt with in 2010. Treasury insisted that MTEC process finalized the new budget program structure. We requested that we should not implement it from April of last year, because in the process of shifting budget program structure, you have to calculate your figures backwards so that the historical expenditure is then cascaded into the expenditure going forward. So you will see that although we've got a new budget program structure, the historical information is there. So the activities get mapped against the new structure and the financial details are there. So in no way is the budget program...
Can we request members to their phones very far away, because they interrupt. If your students is on silent, switch on silent or pretty far away, because
sorry, Chip, there may be my computer overlapping with the machine.
Oh, maybe
so in no way does the shift to a new budget program structure hide any of the money. Because all of that, and if I'm sure that finance will be able to give the further details of how the money is, but the backward calculations around that money in our new budget program structure is part of what Treasury insists that we are doing. So it's under the guidance of Treasury and what they are recommending in terms of the budget structure that we have done that realignment. I hope that provides the explanation of it. But the money historically and going forward is all properly accounted for in the new budget program structure.
Somebody talked to us about the allocation of budgets. We've been complaining about this thing for years. We really are asking, we are saying to you that it is your constitutional obligation as well as your obligation by the Act that this department moves from incarceration to rehabilitation. We're not debating about it. I think what we are asking you is, what are you guys doing to change this budget? We've been preaching this gospel for a while. And it continues. In fact, Mr. Abraham is raising an even more fundamental issue. He's saying, Commissioner, that progressively over the next 3 years, these things are getting less and less. And it therefore begs the question, are you serious about the allocation? I think that is the point. Can somebody talk to us on that? Or is it a white paper? Because if it is, let's change the white paper, because then you forever going to be conflict with the law, because we're not happy that you are doing what is required of you for the Act. If it's not achievable, say so. Anybody wants to respond on this one? Why is development and care, as Mr. Abraham put it, sucking the high interest of the budget, and will suck the high interest even more going forward? Yeah, I guess that's the question about.
Chairperson, I think perhaps let me explain the dimension in relation to the allocation of the compensation of employees budget, because I think that we what we have tried to explain to the portfolio committee previously is that the bulk of our compensation of employees budget for custodial officials lies under security budget program. Because at this stage we have not disaggregated our custodial officials into the career parking of security and rehabilitation officers. So the security budget program is inflated by that element of the custodial officials as a whole being under that budget program. So that is the one aspect that although those custodial officials are not doing purely security functions, they are doing the full range of functions. Currently, they are located under that budget program. It's part of the process going forward to be able, as we address a number of HR issues, to be able to address that. And that will then give a more accurate perception of the compensation employees across the compensation of employees allocation across the budget program. That's the one aspect. The second aspect I think that it's important to recognize is that while within the security budget program, there are key goods and services. There are procurement of technology, be it perimeter fencing, be it security technology in a variety of different ways, which costs a lot of money. Within the rehabilitation element, within corrections programs, the elements that fall under the new budget program of corrections, which is PERSONOC, its corrections program, its offender development, and its psychological, social work, and spiritual services. Those, to a very large extent, outside of the element of the production workshops on the farm, where clearly there's procurement of raw materials for the production workshops and agricultural equipment and seeds and the necessary infrastructure for agriculture. Outside of that area, corrections programs is primarily a person-driven process. There are not goods and services that need to be bought in any real sense in that. Within development, again, it's a person-driven process, apart from, as I've indicated, the agriculture and production. The psychological services, the spiritual care, and the social work services, again, it's a human-driven process. And I think that also accounts for it. So it's a complex issue of not being able to say goods and services, you can measure it across all budget programs, and it should be, because it's going to vary. It should vary from area to area. So I think that while we would not, we are certainly consistently in the process through our budget estimate process, which happens in the May, June process of every year, trying to ensure that we tweak these and we are able to adjust them. That would be our explanation of what, in terms of the raw figures, then appears to be quite a serious distortion.
Ms. Aina, you know, you guys have a, I'm trying to think of the correct word, I think it's a migration policy or migration strategy that we've been hearing about, moving people from admin and all those type of things. You're saying to us now that it's difficult to be able to pin the salaries and wages for those that are in rehabilitation into rehabilitation and care, or incarceration is inflated by that. How far is your migration policy? Because it doesn't mean that when you do your migration policy, people will be working in the factory floor, but will still be shown as admin staff, because that's the next thing that's going to happen. We've been fighting with this department being top-heavy, and part of the top-heaviness from outside can only be from the figures, because we don't count the head counts. So if you're going to be migrating people from office to the factory floor and the money doesn't follow the human being, as you're saying the case is here, then we're going to have a problem. So it's more than just this one. I think your entire migration thing must take the money to follow the individual, otherwise we're going to have this problem all the time. So it's why is it difficult to do it, and what are your time frames? What are your time frames? So that we can put it off and measure it in the future, so that we don't come back to this thing every year and say, why is incarceration more than everything else? Can we have a time frame?
Chairperson, indeed we're in full agreement with you. And what we have committed, corporate services has been doing a very detailed integrated human resource strategy planning session, and they've committed themselves within a 3-month period to be able to give us a map of, because there are a number of things that actually need to follow each other sequentially in order to be able to address it. The one element is the migration to center-based posts. That migration has happened in the sense that people have opted for that choice. We have not necessarily been able to release all of them because we can't not have people to do those functions. So part of the plan will deal with that process of being able to fill the posts that people would then be the functions that would not be performed as they take up their posts at center-based. Part of that also has to address the migration into security personnel and rehabilitation personnel. And that's apart from the professionals who already are very clearly identified as the rehabilitation officials. But that would be people working within the unit who would be performing more of the rehabilitation facilitation rather than the security function. But we have tasked corporate services to develop us that plan that is able to take us from now through to ensuring that we are also able to very clearly identify which posts and correctional services in fact require correctional services at post. People need to be trained as correctional services officials, as opposed to those that are in fact Public Service Act posts. They are functions that are performed in every government department, asset management, finance, HR. Those are not specifically correctional services' unique responsibilities. That we're able to then also be quite clear, these are career paths within the department. If you're a finance person, you should be able to see your way clear to ultimately becoming the CFO. Those processes are what we have indicated to corporate services they need to put into a plan over the next 3 months, which will then have very clear timelines and very, very clear cost implications. Where there are cost implications, obviously that needs to feed into either reprioritizing or into to MTEC in the July-August process.
All right, just for our own understanding then, Ms. Shaina. One, we accept that when the salary follows the human being, there will be a change to what is happening here. But you're saying the other part of it is that in rehabilitation and care, it's more of a service than a hard something. So the only expense would be Vincent's salary as a teacher, and not, when I say the only, I say the majority of it is going to be like that. Okay, so that we don't come back to this thing every other year. So, and until you fix this thing up, we're going to continue to complain about it. Because once you fix it up, then at least we have an understanding that if Vincent is there, it doesn't mean that there's no service being provided in terms of education, because it's there. But it's something that I think we are grappling with. The final one, this whole issue of value for money when you compare PPPs to our thing. Members are feeling that we are not getting value for money if you compare the two. Can somebody explain that to us? Both in terms of these people are working the whole day, all sorts of things. And you know that we put our head on the block saying that PPP is not the route to go, so you can't let us down on this one. You really can't let us down on this one. But the figures are beginning to show that if it's going to cost us the same amount of money and they're getting more of a benefit in PPPs, then maybe we made a mistake, Mr. Self, those of us that supported the... Yeah? Please explain the value for money. Your figures are showing 313 in the private, in the state, and about 380 in the private. Why are we not getting value for money as we get in the other ones? Can somebody explain?
Chairperson, I was going through my notes here, and it's taking time. I'm not going to speak to the figures because I'm trying to scroll and find the figures here. I don't think in the manner in which this has been presented, there's no value for money. The triple P in their main, that a cost element and a cost driver. And when we made our calculations based on the request to abrogate or cancel the PPPs, it was also on the basis of the fact that they're very expensive on inmate cost per inmate. If you may allow me so to discuss other things, I'll be able to get my figures here so I can show the whole philosophy as to how the cost, using our own models, it is much cheaper to build our own facilities, and it is cost effective And it is also the issue of competitiveness is in the picture. I'll request the chairperson to allow so that I can go to my notes here, and I'll prove that there is a cost-benefit analysis that has been made. No. The historical past should not be a yardstick into the future. I just want to say, if it took us 5 years, we need to be improving that there's a short turnaround time, because the more it takes you to build, the more cost escalations are in the process. From a simple economic analysis, that's what we are trying to avoid.
Yes. So before Self and Bonyana can do dialogue, yes.
Okay, no, let us give the benefit of the doubt to the commissioner that he can get back. But in the same way, since we're giving him time, let him also tell what has he done about his promise that he was going to form a company where inmates would produce goods and there would be more activity. How far has that plan come?
All right. We are going to raise these issues in the public debate on the 16th on the basis of information you give us or you don't give us. You understand where what the sentiment of the members are. And we will raise it accordingly, and somebody would be embarrassed in the process. So I think what members are saying is, we are being informed that it costs 313 Rand in Sun City or in the new Kimberley, it costs 313 Rand. And you go across the road to Mangaung and it costs 400 Rand. A very small difference in terms of rands and cents. However, in terms of the services provided to the individuals in these two, it's uncomparable. Because these work the whole day, I will sleep the whole day. And why? I think that's the question that you need to answer to us. And the second question is, what is your plan? What is your concrete plan in ensuring that members of our constituency, inmates, are kept busy every day, including the trading company, that they are not exploited? We just want to know those things, because it's something that we will raise in the debate on the basis of what we have. And our debate is on the 16th of May, so we're asking for that thing 7 days before the 16th of May, which would make it roundabout, when we come back from the long weekend, the 2nd or 3rd of May, so that we can formulate our responses for the debate. Everything that we're asking from now on would be for that day, the 3rd or 4th of May. Can somebody explain to Mr. Self about the full-time schools? At one point you say it's 2, another point you say it's 11. What is the full-time school story? And I think that's on page 32.
Yes. Chairperson, I would request that we focus on the target for the year. And this is driven by the fact that you can only register a school at a certain period of the year, and you can't do it on a quarterly basis. So if by end of 2011 you had 8 schools, for example, for all the quarters of that academic year, it will remain the same. Only the following year can you say 2013-2014, it will move up to 16 schools. So the quarterly figure is really something that is merely for our own reporting, that we know that internally we expect people to be reporting on the 8 schools. And then as we increase according to the academic year, we get more. We also record the new schools in the beginning of each academic year to say we've added so many. So there was even internally debate of whether do we need a quarterly figure in a document like this. But our fear was that if we don't have it like that, then there's a lot of things that we might miss during the year in terms of reporting. So it's mainly for that, but I would request that we focus on the
target for the year, which is 11, and then the following year is 13, and then we're hoping to increase as we go along.
Can I just then understand, because thank you for that explanation, does that mean at the moment, because we're in the first quarter of the 2012-13 financial year, does that mean that there are 8 centres already registered? Okay.
And to be 8 for the whole of this year?
No.
The
no. I'll say
the academic year.
Yes, for the academic year. This year it's supposed to be.
Yes, for the academic year, yes. The calendar year.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
And then in the fourth quarter of the financial year, it's the beginning of
it's
the
year. It's more because it's January. Yes. Okay. Yes.
All right, thank you very much. Mr. Moyane, the grievance time is 30 days. We know that people have been on suspension and all things for a very long time, and Mr. South is saying, and we asked this question yesterday, that are the targets realistic, are they achievable, and are they affordable? When we started our discussion yesterday, that's what we asked them. Whatever these guys have put here, are they realistic, and the experts will tell us, are they achievable, and are they affordable? You are now putting a target of saying all grievances will be dealt with in 30 days. Our question is one, is this thing achievable, or are you just giving us a figure? Because Mr. Self doesn't think you're going to meet 30 days. And some of us don't think you'll meet 30 days, because don't come back to us and say Pop Crew is the one that is holding us up. Because if it's not realistic, then don't put it into our target. I think that's what we are saying. Can you really have somebody suspended today and have this case finalized in 30 days? Can, is that achievable? That's the question that Mr. South is asking.
Chairperson, can I try to assist? I think that I was going to suggest that Mr. South should hand over the case to the Commission immediately. But on a more serious note, we need to draw a distinction between grievances and disciplinary processes. We are obliged in terms of policy to deal with grievances within a particular time period. Right? A grievance is a process in which a person says to their supervisor, I'm unhappy about this, and the supervisor does whatever possible within policy to be able to resolve it. It's not a process of a disciplinary process in which we've investigated somebody. So in a sense, a grievance is a process that I initiate because I'm unhappy with something. Whereas a disciplinary process is something that somebody else initiates in relation to me. So I think that we need to just be very clear. Obviously, it remains a challenge to be able to finalize grievances within the time period that is allowed. And at times, it's a question of whether the grievance is final, whether it can be resolved. It certainly can be finalized, but it may be something in which what I'm complaining about, in fact, is outside of policy. The department therefore resolves it by explaining back to me that you can't do that because it is against policy. So you have to accept that that is the reality. But I think for me, it's like, what we need to ensure is that we've got a common understanding of the process in relation to grievances and the process in relation to disciplinary processes. So the suspensions relate to where we are doing an investigation against somebody and we're suspending them because either the investigation has indicated that what they've done is of such a serious nature that they should be suspended, or they're suspended to enable the investigation and the disciplinary process. But I think that that's the conflation in...
Let's ask the question differently. How is this grievance measured? Because I can tell you that we have a grievance, or had a grievance in Rustenburg, of a lady that was, she initiated this thing about being molested. She raised it. About 3 months later, she came back to us and said to us, these people are trying to put me out of the house. She was living in one of those houses there. Mm-hmm. Now, this is her grievance. Now, the question that we are raising, unless they bring it to us, and I'm saying this because I take what Baba Ndlovu is saying, because it's real, we are being flooded. Baba Ndlovu, if staff don't come back to us, because Jenny, Ms. Shaina is saying a grievance is something that only staff can do a grievance. I mean. Now, if that staff is made a grievance against his manager, and in 30 days the manager hasn't done it, there's no way that that thing can be measured unless it comes to us.
Yes.
So I'm asking Ms. Shaina again, is this thing really doable? Is it really doable? Because if it's doable, we have to find a mechanism of measuring it. And one of the mechanisms that we will find of measuring it is going on our oversight and saying, has anybody have a grievance? How long have you had your grievance for?
Sorry, can I ask another follow-up question, since that, playing from the explanation. If the top line then relates to suspensions and the bottom line deals with grievances, like at the bottom of page 20, okay, so the top line deals, as I understand, with suspensions, and the bottom line deals with grievances. Okay, you say that the target for year one, that's this financial year, is to reduce the 2011-2012 baseline by 10%.
Yes.
What is the 2011-2012 baseline, so that we can see whether you're going to keep the target?
Just on that issue, the baseline will be established in our annual report. I don't have, at this point, I'm not sure whether CEC Corporate Services has it at your fingertips, but that baseline will be the indicator on the information on this indicator from this full financial year.
Right. But it comes back to the point that I raised earlier. And that is that it's very difficult then to judge progress because you've got to read this document with the annual report each time. And then you've got to make sure that the document, that the figures contained in the annual report, which I went through to try and compare how we were doing, speak to one another. In other words, please use the same indicators in the annual report that are used in this document.
I just want to add that all these labor issues is governed by the labor law and collective agreements is law in the labor field. Is these things in line with those collective agreements?
Yes, let's take a decision. Because really, I think at some point we've got to adopt the strategy. We don't want to offend our citizens to something that we know is not measurable. We'd rather write our report and say we adopted, but we question the accuracy of page 5 or page something. That's part of why we ask this question, because we have to adopt this thing. And we're not going to adopt something that we know is being used. Somebody else picks it up, they will say, they apply their mind to these guys if they see something that says in 30 days or so. So I think that's part of the reason why we ask these. Here, are these things measurable and affordable?
Chair, for ease of reference and common understanding, I would request the CDC Corporate Service to give us how we deal with the grievance procedure so that we have a common sense as to what are the issues, how it's done, what are the complications, and so that we can have a sense as to how this thing is measured. Thanks, Chair.
And the measuring too, because we are going to monitor that measuring too to see if it is within 30 days.
Thank you, sir. As Ms. Lina has alluded to, the historical data that we have currently is up to 2010-2011, and we do have information up to the last quarter of 2011-12 as a baseline, which is not reflecting on this document. Yes, Chair, our grievance procedure and the disciplinary issues, we deal with them in terms of an assigned a collective agreement, a disciplinary procedure and code of the department, and it is aligned to the Labor Relations Act. And as we are reporting here, Chair, we are confident of the figures that were stated here. Why? Because these things are measured on a monthly basis. Over and above the quarterly targets that we have stated here, we have operational plans, which we have monthly targets for, to see how we improve on how we do these things. And on a monthly basis, we receive reports from all the regions of the Department of Correctional Services. So we do have a monitoring tool on this matter. So where I'm sitting, Chair, I should say that we are confident that we are going to achieve the target as later.
No. I'll come to you, Advocate. CDC, you know, I gave you the example of Rustenburg.
Yeah.
There's an example in Ermelo.
if that individual didn't come to complain to us, you see, this is what I'm not understanding, Ms. Shine and Commissioners. You are saying a grievance is something initiated by the official. Now, this is an official in Ermelo that has a grievance against her area manager in Ermelo. That area manager in Ermelo then goes and gets a Department of Investigation unit somewhere, who together with them cook the books. Because if the truth comes out, that area commissioner is getting fired. The question that we are asking is, how do you measure these things? Because, Commissioner, we pick these things up. And I'm just saying to you, and this is a serious message, because that was an assault case. Somebody must still come back and tell us what has happened to, I forget his name, but what has happened to that guy? Because what he did, Jenny, Ms. Shiner, he got two people fired. He got two people fired because they were going to blow the top that he was having a sexual relationship with them. This chap went and he framed somebody else. Now I'm asking you, CDC, you are saying you get reports from the areas. No, Baba, no. Did he ever give you a report that he was sexually assaulting somebody? His CPA. And number two, we are saying to you that that took more than 30 days. We're just asking the question. Should we not go and reconsider this thing? That's all we're asking. A grievance of 30 days, I think that's the question that we are asking. Is 30 days really, if you take these cases? Because we're not going to be worried about somebody who was reprimanded because he came 5 minutes late. We're really not going to deal with that. But when it comes to sexual harassment, we are duty-bound as Parliament to deal with it.
Maybe Jefferson. The way we are asking a question, you are putting yourself in a very awkward position. Ask yourself that if they don't want to hear what you are saying about the figures that they are putting in, what will happen if they don't? Ask that question. What will happen if this thing does not happen?
Right.
That's a question that you must ask. Because it will be simple and straightforward. Because the way we are asking a question, They will defend the figure that we are giving them. Ask the question, what will happen if this figure does not materialize? Because if Mr. Self can't buy a cake, what will happen?
You give him money.
That's a question that you should ask yourself. Don't be diplomatic, because you want to, if at the end you want to sign for this document. That's why I'm putting it bluntly, so that we are a family here, so that we understand each other. Please.
Jefferson, thank you. Yes, Jefferson, we as the department, we can go back and reconsider our target, but the unfortunate thing is that it's our policy that we are talking to here. Our policy says these things must happen within a certain time frame. And what happens is, when we receive the report, they're about compliance to our policy. If we don't meet the figures that are stated here, our internal audit is supposed to be on our case in terms of why are we not, it's a compliance issue, Chairperson. And what happens is that we do, when we receive our monthly reports, we do follow up with regions and we do request that please comply. And even the example that the Chairperson was referring to, yes, I'm aware about that case in Element, and we are dealing with it. Much as we receive the information late, it is, yes, human. Yes, it is human for someone not to report himself or herself, but we try our best to read the reports, analyze them, and assist the regions as much as we can in order for them to comply. There will be consequences for non-compliance. We issue non-compliance certificates as well.
Yes, we are here,
sir. Fine, let me ask you a question, because it's answering what we are saying. If there's non-compliance in our quarterly meeting, we're going to come to you and say to you, we pick up A, B, C, D non-compliance. What has happened to those people? Because some will come directly to us, some we're going to pick up in our oversight visit. Because this one will be a compliance matter, you say. We will be able to say, these are the cases where 30 days is not met. What has happened to you? Fine. We will sign the declaration that we will do the compliance. Mr. Morisse, you want to speak, and Commissioner, you want to speak. We're just talking about
these grievances and are these things realistic? But Baba Gopal said, don't worry about the realistic. Just get the commitment that if they don't comply, this is what we're going to do about it.
Thanks, Chairperson. Basically, what happens here, we've got different levels where grievances are being handled. At correctional center level, where officials are working, where normally they have grievances, an official will register a grievance with his supervisor. Your supervisor will have to work through that grievance. That is level one. If the supervisor, when giving feedback to the official is not happy, then that grievance, chairperson, gets elevated to another level, which is level two. Meaning that at level one, that grievance must have been handled in 30 days. Now, it gets elevated to level two, which is the area commissioner, level three, regional commissioner, and then level four to head office. Now, all of these levels, chairperson, have got their different time frames. But importantly and basically, that grievance, as it is registered today, within 30 days at the level where I'm working, it needs to have been attended to. That's what the CDC is trying to explain, chairperson. And that is what we are putting here as an objective for us to achieve.
So it's not that it should be 100 and 320 to all that's what it means. If we're talking about a grievance for this, it will be 30 days for this area and then 30 days for another one. I say 30 days, I'm saying
ideally.
Look, we're not fighting. All we are saying is don't let us append our signature to a document that we can't defend. I think that's what you're saying. If you're saying it's 30 days at the area, at the point of where it happened, it's fine. We will report it accordingly in our area. That it's 30 days on the ground floor.
The problem lies in the word finalized. Because when you say finalized,
it
implies that the matter has been dealt with.
And concluded.
That's where the problem is.
Can I just clarify one issue, Chairperson? The collective agreement is saying the whole process, in other words, from level 1 to level 4, it's 30 days. Hence, Mr. Modisa was saying that each level has got different time frames. For example, level 1 lasts about 2 days, level 2, whatever, and then it increases, if the number of days increase as the number of levels increase. So some grievances, it does happen that, for example, if I am level 3, I'll be able to resolve them. The it at times, it's not about saying when resolving, you are actually giving what the official ones was, as Ms. Shana has indicated. Sometimes we do get grievances as managers which are contrary to policy. And therefore, the manager, you cannot therefore say, no, because they are aggrieved, it's fine for you not to do 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. But we therefore need to clarify the policy position of the department and therefore engage one-on-one also. And in those engagements, you are allowing the official to also come with their own labor representative if they so wish to choose and explain the position. And in most instances, for example, you would find that even the grievances that we would get at my level, they don't even necessarily go to even CFO.
Thank you. You're helping us. So you're saying there should be no grievance, regardless of where it has come from, that is longer than 30 days. That's what you are saying, John. That's what the policy is saying. So we will ask those that come with grievances, when did you lodge this grievance? To us, we're going to ask them. And if that grievance is indeed longer than 30 days, it means there's been non-compliance and you guys are going to deal with it. All we are saying to you is that we understand it. We just don't think it's achievable because we are saying all grievances. I think Mr. Sal's cake is safe, quite honestly. It's fine. All right. No, it's fine. All right. As long as you understand it in that fashion, it's fine. Mr. Marco Gula is asking the question. Are you ready to comply with the Constitution in terms of mentally ill, in terms of physically disabled, and in terms of the vulnerable? Not only the Constitution, but your own policy. Are you ready for that? We ask that question because we know that there are people that are mentally ill, and we know that they're not supposed to be there, they need to be somewhere else. The reality is that they are there. We know there are people that are in wheelchairs and whatever that are there. Are you in a position to satisfy the constitutional requirement?
Chairperson, thank you, and members of parliament. I will request my colleague, Ms. Jordan Garner, to talk about mentally ill. What I can say with regard to people with disabilities, people, juvenile and young offenders, female offenders, Chairperson, is that the department has taken a policy decision with regard to provision of facilities for young offenders. And as a result of that, you'll see in the plan that we have, we indicate in there that with the upgrade of each and every correctional center, it includes putting up ramps for people with disabilities and making cells in such a manner that those people will then be able to be treated properly. But it further goes on to say that we also must put in place facilities where we will incarcerate mothers with babies, but also importantly, Chairperson, those offenders that are first-time offenders in our facilities, those that have been admitted for the first time in our facilities. That's why we have provided also a list of the facilities that are intended for first-time offenders. Maybe in a short half sentence to talk about the mentally ill as far as we are concerned, Chairperson. The policy decision is, as we go about procuring additional bed space, we must as well plan for people with mental health challenges, because these people are in our facilities, as you correctly say, and our department is in no way able to deal with them apart from administering the medication that has been provided to them through the Mental Health Act. Thanks.
Thank you, Chairperson. From what my colleague is saying, infrastructure-wise, one can say we are not necessarily ready. There are areas where we clearly don't have the capacity, particularly in the very, very small centers where you don't have enough space to separate inmates. But we try as much as possible in those instances to transfer inmates to facilities where they can be not necessarily mixed with the other offenders. If I can deal with the health side part of it, as part of our APP, we have committed ourselves that we want to improve the diagnosis of people with mental illness. We need to also improve the treatment that we give to them. But it is also a fact that much of the services that we need to render to offenders with mental illnesses are services that must be rendered by a psychologist, in other instances a psychiatrist, and it is a fact that is one of the scarce skills in our environment, where you'll find that we do not necessarily have a psychologist readily available at a particular center. We are trying as much as possible to also work very closely with the Department of Health so that in areas where we can't render that service, the Department of Health is able to support us. We had an engagement with them also as recent as last week, where they had a workshop or conference type of session with different stakeholders on mental health, where we were also putting our own needs and challenges on the table to say that we need the support of the Department of Health in managing mental health in our facilities. But as I said, our targets are mainly focusing on the diagnosis and ensuring that we treat those inmates that are found to be requiring mental health services.
All right. We were also asked a question yesterday about the
transgender. You know what we're talking about. What are you guys doing about those? Because we think those are vulnerable people. What are you doing about that? I'm saying, are you agreeing with us that they are vulnerable,
yeah,
and they must be treated as vulnerable?
Yeah.
So we won't go into a facility and find Queenie with a bunch of black
brothers.
That's what it means by saying you take the problem.
Yeah.
All right. No, that's fine. You don't need to, as long as you're aware of it. Can somebody talk to us about your target, your vacancy target? And I guess Michael Gould is asking this question because we know that it's been a very difficult exercise for you to fill vacancies. You've got some targets and vacancies, but more than that, as you answer that question, somebody told us last week that your vacancy, is not last week, yesterday, that your vacancy rate stands at 1,898. And I did a calculation that on average all those people earn 10,000 rand a month. I don't know what the salary scale of correctional services. But if those people earn 10,000 rand a month, that 1,800 people for a year is about 230 million rand. Now they wouldn't all have been there for a year. But we know that those are funded posts. The question we are asking here is, what are you doing with that money that you have not spent because of the vacancy? Okay, where is that money? Because we know that part of your diverting of funds, you take that money and you go and buy cars with it because you haven't spent it. Or you go and have concerts or somewhere. We are on record of having said to you that we want those money to be returned to treasury. We are on record of having said that those money that you've not spent must go back to treasury and cannot be used for anything other than salary. So the question is, are you going to achieve your target filling the vacancies, especially Sokela in your section? There are many, many vacancies in finance, many vacancies in IT. And number two, there where those vacancies are, what has happened to that money? Our rough calculation said there were 250 million rand. That's Mark Abula's question.
And thank you, Chief Justin. Probably if I can remind you, the committee, the department during 2008-2009 financial year, the department has an unauthorized expenditure of which it was on our books as an embassy of matter as well. When we appeared to the SCOPA, and then Treasury make it very clear to them that if they approve that unauthorized expenditure, it needed to be funded within our budget. And the chairperson requested that the department and the treasury needed to sit down together and then reach the common ground to see, is it possible in order to project that we need to fund that. Indeed, Chairperson, we sat with Treasury. Before we even submitted to the SCOPA, we appeared to this committee, Chairperson, where we provided the projections to say if we can able to save around about this money, looking at the trend of vacancy rate, we will able to fund that unauthorized expenditure because it was very critical for us, Chairperson, because if it's not coming out from the emphasis of matter, it might be escalated to the qualification. Chairperson, we were quite lucky because while we saved that money, about 483, Chairperson, and then the proclamation was signed by the President towards the end of March, of which we managed to fund that, based on the amount that we did not spend on the compensation, we managed to fund the unauthorized expenditure. That is the essence of it.
We are the same Makakun. The money that they were supposed to pay for salaries, they didn't pay. They paid that overdraft that they had last year. That's in essence what they are saying. So that overdraft don't appear in the new year. You've used this money. The other part of Akakula's question is your current targets. What is your strategy to achieve your current targets?
Yeah. Chairperson, suffice to say that that was also for salary. That overdraft was for salary.
Yes.
Your vacancies,
and please let us understand this thing and once and for all, because there keeps on being the figure of 41,000 rand that we have treasury is funding. That's 41,000. Yes, treasury is funding. We want to know what is it that you've been authorized to hire. How many do you have on your books now? So that we can say that you've got a vacancy of 10 or 11 or whatever. And then Makakula is asking, how long is it going to take you to fill those 10 and 11? And make sure, Guti, when people resign naturally, others are brought on board. Because we can't have a situation, Commissioner, where we have people vacant for so long. Because it's against the job creation thing that we're talking about. So it's that thing. What is your salary retention, your salary, not salary, your HR retention and your HR, what is your HR strategy, ma'am? We don't want vacancies.
Well, thank you, Chairperson. But you asked the question, where are we standing now? Because in our APP, it is stated that for target year 1, 2012-2013,
page
18, yes. We will always have, we'll have 97 of funded vacant posts filled against a total of 41,911 funded positions. Chairperson, as we speak, by the end of the last quarter, that is end of March 2012, we are sitting at 97 filled vacancies of the funded post establishment, and what we are saying for 2012-13, we as the Department of Correctional Services, we have to maintain that 97% filled vacancies, taking into consideration, of course, the natural attrition and the scarce skills that we have, and what we are also we have also broken down our targets on monthly basis. And we are also currently revising our retention strategy, that is a recruitment and retention strategy, which was at the time only talking to our critical and scarce skills. But Jefferson might have realized, and the members of parliament, that we, during the implementation of our OSDs, the movements from centered and non-centered base have posed some challenges. Hence, we have to revise that retention strategy, which is more than 3 years now. What we've also done during our ops planning, we've finalized the revision of our integrated HR strategy, which is talking to these matters as to how, in practical sense, how are we going to be improving on the feeding of vacancies. Thank you, Chair.
Mark, let's just put the things to you differently. Why have you got a figure of 97%? Why not 100%? I'll tell you why. I'm doing my sums now. Commissioner, you know what it means. 97% of your 41,000 is 40,654. That's 1,257 vacancies. I'm just saying, in a country where we have got so much unemployment, why are we agreeing on, why are we being mediocre? If you take 1, 2, and you'll say to me that that's the national norm. Because if it is the national norm, we're certainly going to raise it to Praveen. If you take 1,200 people times 50 departments, how many people can we create jobs for here? But because maybe it's the treasury norm that you must have reached 97, so departments use that as compliance.
But you don't look at the other side of the coin. I'm just saying 1,200 people. You know, if Commissioner, you give me permission, my constituency are going to find them. Abandabana's fine. And we're sitting here and we're saying, well, we'll only reach 97%. We're just appealing, ladies and gentlemen, that even if it is the national benchmark, it really is going against government policy. Because government policy says everybody, as far as possible, must work. And here we've got an opportunity for 1,257 people that, according to your targets, if we sign it off, we are denying 1,200 people work for the year. I just think that I can't sleep at night with that. So we will accept it, but we are appealing you to do something about it. Because really, if you're serious, you yourself won't sleep. What is your... So the question of filling vacancies, the specific ones like finance and so on, are you guys comfortable that you'll be able to do that? You know, we've been saying for years, Commissioner, don't tell me you can't find a bookkeeper because VITS has got many BCOMs and that type of thing. Just go and see it. So, can we be satisfied that there is not going to be an argument that says this is a scarce skill? I'm not sure what are the scarce skills in correctional services, maybe doctors and psychologists. But finance and those things can't be scarce skills. And yet you've got the 30% vacancy now and then on those things. So can we have an undertaking that if we are harsh on you on those things, we are being fair?
Sir,
agreed, yes, sir.
On this issue of jobs, filling vacancies, I just want to refer to the NGO Performance Plan, page 18. And the target year 2021-2030, where they talk of 97% of funded vacant posts filled against a total of 41,911. And just below that, chair, you have absorption of qualifying excess SANDF personnel. Now, when you say qualifying, what sort of qualifications have you been looking for? Are there amongst them people who have the type of skills that you are looking for? And how has it been going with this? Is there a historical, historically, have you absorbed such personnel? Or is this a one-off? Because I don't see it for the following years.
Chairperson, it's a once-off in this particular financial
year. And numbers involved.
Now, we don't have numbers. What is happening is that we are having exploratory discussions with Department of Defense. The objective being that we don't have to retrain these people. They're coming from security. All they need to be doing is to reorientation within our own environment. Now, those discussions will help us in terms of filling some of the key critical positions, especially in the coal face of business. Now, ideally, we're looking at very high-level numbers, but we cannot put and quantify. It depends as to the numbers that are being shared off from defense. Bearing in mind that the police and ourselves are also looking at the very same kitty. I must indicate that the Department of Home Affairs has also already absorbed some of the officials who are working at the airports who come from defense. So it's a conscious decision within the cluster, security cluster, that instead of going to look for people outside, there is a pot and there is what you call a captive market of people who fall within the category that might meet the requirements of the department. So we're working hard, especially on the issue of the 1,200 and some of the key skills that we want to deal with. You must bear in mind that in defense they have artisans, they have professional people who might not qualify within the bigger scale of things, but they can be brought into our organization to beef up where there is a lack. Current discussion is that we're looking, as my colleague indicated, that we want about 300 people. So we need to start at a certain number. But be as it may, when this issue is firmed, we'll be able to report to yourselves. And we agree with you, Chairperson, on the issues of finance, HR, we cannot say these are skills. These are professional skills which are available. And we'll do everything possible. Precisely because, including internal auditors. Because if we're able to measure ourselves, we need to have this skills in the coal face of business. We cannot have these skills only residing at head office level. Thanks, Chair.
Okay. Then the last question from Mr. Marco Gula is the one around betting. I don't know the figures, but the last time I think there was something like 2,000 or 3,000 people that had been betted of the 41,000, that type of thing. I think Marco Gula's question is basically, have you guys got a plan? Because we're all agreeing that these people need to be vetted. You have continuously said, and we know, that there will be certain people that will resist vetting for their own reasons. But nevertheless, vetting is something that must happen. Is there something that we're doing, or is this a song that we will sing forever? Because some of us are worried that you can't have over 26s and 28s and those people looking after our inmates. Yesterday, SAPS asked the question to police, who is sitting in front of us here?
Yeah.
Who is sitting in front of us? That's what they asked. We need to ask the question, who is guarding those people there? Because I think that's the question that we are asking. Who is guarding those people? And that is where the vetting exercise comes in. So, is there a plan, ladies and gentlemen? Forget yourselves, but there. And we tend to get a sense where, Nina, you all get vetted. And you can come here, Commissioner, and say, no, but me and my team have been vetted. It's really not where it should be vetted. The vetting is there where the damage is happening on the ground, ladies and gentlemen. So, I think that's Marco Gula's question. Is there a plan? I don't know if you picked it up here in terms of your question. I don't know if it's a target. If it's not a target, shouldn't it be a target? So that we keep it on the agenda. Because we think it's something, certainly having raised it, I'm sure one of the members are going to raise it in the debate. Do you want to make a comment on vetting?
Yes, sir. Chairperson, the question is appropriate. Once again, we are a victim of what we write. And we need to correct it here. There are two things. There is vetting and security clearance. We might have lumped all this into one particular word, vetting. Vetting is at a different level, and security clearance is for a certain category. And I would like to believe that member of the portfolio committee, Leonard, would agree with me. The same applies within the police. At a certain level, there's complete vetting, which is the responsibility of national intelligence. But there are certain levels and categories of employees who go through security clearance. In the main, in the business that we do, especially the colleagues that you are mentioning who are guarding our inmates, there has to be very high-level security clearance, which is continuously done on an annual basis or biannual, so as to see whether these people fit the profile of the work which they are doing. We have a unit that is called security standards in our environment. That deals with clearance of most of our people. But bear in mind, when we make intake of people into our organization, the first line for being part of the college, you have to go through a security clearance process. But as to whether we have a continuum which is constant, that we clear them on a continuous basis, that's another issue that we need to put in place. But for certain categories, at senior management level, vetting is compulsory. But that vetting also differs in terms of level. It's confidential, secret, and top secret. Sitting here, Chairperson, I can say with confidence that all these things in the organization, we don't have a 100% situation where we say, even at top management, we have everybody vetted. No, it's not everybody vetted. I don't have to tell a lie here. Not everybody is vetted. And the chair is correct that it's not a question of resistance. I don't want to get into that debate whether people are resisting. But the fact of the matter is that we have made it very clear that everybody is going to be vetted. And I can confirm in this meeting that I've had a discussion with the previous heads of national intelligence and the current head of national. They have a serious problem themselves. So the intention here is to have senior management that is fully compliant with the vetting process in accordance to the law and security standards of this country. But we have no reason not to have security clearance of the lower levels, because that we can put into the hands of SAPS
and also our own services to deal with the clearances that are necessary. So we have a mechanism. It's a question of us now starting to implement this effectively. But at senior management level, I cannot say everybody sitting here is having top secret, secret, and confidential. But yes, we are working towards that. We have had national intelligence in our facility dealing with this matter. So they have their own serious challenges, but security clearance is a must. Because all the intakes, even at the point of interview in our environment, you have to come to an interview already with a security clearance. So I just want to make that submission. So it's going to be a challenge that we don't want that you lose sight of. You may question us on a continuous basis, so that we need to be alert about it, that you also worried about it. So it won't be an issue that we feel that we're being badgered, that when you raise this matter, it's something that you need to constantly remind us that we do a checklist about it. Thanks, Chair.
On that subject, Commissioner, just on one line. Gunamuzi, when you guys moved him from the ministry, you said he's going to head up an intelligence stroke security unit in the facilities. Where is that matter now? How far is that?
Gunamuzi is the chief security officer. One, it will deal with all our security issues with relation to the prisons, correctional centers, the strengthening of our emergency security task teams, ESTs, so that we have professionalization in that field. Secondly, is to look into security across the whole organization, look into our arsenal, look into our ordinance, because we do have these things. But Gunamuzi is dealing with one component. As I've indicated, that we have security standards, which is NOMSLE, Matikiza. So it has to do with personal security, the vetting clearance. So these two will have to work together. So indeed, there is semblance of professionalization within our facilities. Because if we want to do any raid in any facility, Gunamuzi is the point of entry. He needs to plan, we need to do all these things, as well as doing intelligence gathering. That unit is slowly being developed within the organization, which was non-existent. Bear in mind, it is out of this committee that we're talking about gang strategy. Gang strategy means, therefore, you need to have units that deal with intelligence. You may have amongst your own inmate population those who are becoming informants. Because there is no way that you can be able to penetrate the gang world without having people working for yourselves being inmate themselves, and then, of course, dealing with the issues that emanate from there. So Gunamuzi is heading a unit in this respect.
Thank you very much. The final one before we move on to the next members is Mamgwenya decries the fact that there is very little, if any, target on victim participation.
That's on page 40.
Yeah.
Page 40. 40. 40. 40.
Yes. All right. Thank you very much. In the description of our program, social reintegration, we have two sub-programs, parole administration and restorative justice. And as we go to page 40 on the annual performance plan, Chairperson, it is clearly indicated there that under social reintegration output victim involvement program, there is a plan that we want to increase the participation of victims from 253 to 795 in the first quarter and moving on like that until the end of the financial year target has been achieved. But also, when we look into restorative justice, Chairperson, we also indicate the output restoration of relations between offenders, victims, and communities. This is the two that would assist us and indicate what are the targets that we have to achieve in ensuring that victims are participating in the consideration of the release of our offenders. And Chairperson, also just as information to indicate to the portfolio committee is that we have also received CARA funding from the cluster that will enable us to have a video link with wherever our victims are so that we can ensure that victims do take part in our parole board considerations. We have instances where victims are as far as Eastern Cape and offenders in Gauteng, and sometimes vice versa. And the purpose for that video link is to ensure that wherever the victim is, if we can't bring the victim to where the offender is, we can then at least link up with the victim by through video linking. I think, Chairperson, that we can assure the committee that we will take care of that, and we will make sure that we do increase victim participation. Thank you.
Mr. Molisa, we've written a letter to the NCCS. We will be meeting next week, I think. And I'm sure we've copied yourself. We'll probably get legal opinion on that as well. Mm. What is the weight of victim in terms of parole? You see, because we know that certain victims are never going to forgive people.
Mm.
So do you keep that man in parole because the victim is saying never. We are not going to keep him? We've written a letter to that effect. And I'm not sure, Mr. Modise, if you've received it, but I'm not sure, Commissioner, if you've received it, because this particular one is, we don't sleep at night, Cindy and I, because we are being asked every day this question. And the way we've deflected it is saying that next week we are going to see the NCCF and ask them, because I think this case, Commissioner, has been sent to the review board. But for all intents and purposes, the inmate has satisfied everything else. He should be on parole. On the eve of him going on parole, the victim in KZN said, no, that man must not go on parole, he's still incarcerated. And now, he's been given 6 months. You're talking about video linking. Surely if there's video linking, it doesn't have to take 6 months. For the victim to either say we agree or we disagree, and then for people to take a decision. But I'm just asking the question, because we've asked it formally, and it'll probably come out next week. What is the legal position in terms of the victim having participated and disagreeing, and this person has satisfied everything else? Does he then or she suffer because the victim doesn't agree with them? And we're giving you a classic example now that we have to fend literally every day. And I'm saying next week when the NCCS comes here, it's probably going to hit the media again, because this is one of those matters that we're going to have to raise, that it's going to be there. So we're giving you early warning, Commissioner, that we have written to them, and I suppose the SAI will come and give us some sort of explanation. I don't know if you guys want to talk to it, but it's something that is there. No? All right. Yes, ma'am, and then we'll ask the other three members if they want to, ma'am, quickly.
Yeah, thank you, Chairperson. Because of time, because I see this is linking with this, with the victims. Chairperson, I want you to ask the department in terms of the funding of social reintegration. I'm worried, Chair, because most of the budget is going to other programs. But the really, really it's a correctional service. But the challenge that I'm having, Chair, the fund of this rehabilitation doesn't satisfy me in terms of making this work effectively. In the report yesterday of the NGOs also, it was clear, Chair, that they can't do even their programs effectively because of the fund that they are giving. I'm saying this, Chairperson, because on the 24th of February this year, 2012, more fund, the department tells us that they are launching the way. The halfway house.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Chair, and more funds should go to this channel. So I want to know, Chairperson, that the department has established a number of such projects all over the country. I'm just mixing, Chairperson, because of time, but if the department wants a clarity again, then I'll explain. And I've got the challenge of the budget that is allocated for the rehabilitation. and it covers also the civil society and the NGOs budget. It is not satisfying, Chair. You remember that all the reports that we are getting, even if we go to oversight, you'll find an inmate that was out with a parole then came back. Because nothing that is prepared for that person when he is outside. So that's why I'm concerned about the budget that is allocated to the rehabilitation of the inmate. Thank you, Chair.
Let's get the question from Advocat next, followed by Baba Jogo and then Kwele, and then we will ask the department to respond. Advocat next.
Yeah. I just wanted to add this with the previous labor issues. I just want to know from them with regard to the suspension from 2008, that is now page 20. 2008, 295, 2010, 9, 10, 215, and 2010, 2011, 273. People whose suspensions exceeded 30 days. What happened to those, were they uplifted back into the employee, or did you continue? And if you continue, was it not a breach with your collective agreement? That is the one. The other one is, I think to the annoyance of Nico yesterday, who said he was not in favor of police or correctional service officers to be trained to apply force. No, I'm from that old school. I like to apply like myself and Mortise will be like apply for. So there must be order. So, and that prompted me always to look at the security of things. Now at page 23, the gang strategy. You indicated that you want to reduce 10% incidence of gang violence. 10% of incidence of gang violence. I'm very curious to hear what you mean with that particular thing. And Chair, I would like to propose that we invite Chris Malchas. He is, according to my intelligence in the department, the expert on gang violence in our correctional services, to give us a presentation so that we can understand the extent of gang violence within our centers countrywide, because I believe he's a specialized guy who addresses gang violence expert.
It doesn't work for DCS.
Yeah, DCS.
DCS.
He's one of those applied force. So I like him. So he is that he give us a presentation on the extent. I believe he's an expert. He brief all the regions about this. That he give us request the National Commission. He got that expert there. Then the other thing is with regard to the document. Gang management strategy approved as a working document, it was 2010, your second paragraph. Then we go, and that is in line with your 10%. Yeah? Then the next line, you talk about approved gang management structure. Okay, the one is the plan, the one is the structure. It's now the structure following the plan, I assume. Just clarity, not really a cross-question strategy. And then, your next page is 24, Chair. The third column. It's about the functional electric inmate tracking system to monitor movements of offenders within correctional services. You indicated here that, I just want to know, the way to know. The next one, body scanning machines. You indicated a coupon utilized at 50% of the identified centers. Now, why 50%? And then you say at 2013, 2014, 100% identified centers to install. That's 50% which you identify from the identify centers fully by 2013-2040. So there's no incremental indication percentage per quarter. And then your revised security policy procedures and implementation, your last column on the same page. Then you, the same thing is there, and then you say 80% compliance to review security policy procedures. Now, why 80%? Just to have an understanding. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mama Dobo.
Chairperson, there is in the budget just 3 million rand for the new offices. Does it not contradict? This statement contradicts the statement which was issued by the National Commissioner about moving to the new offices? Is that contradict that statement, or does it? Where does it put the perspective of 3 million rand? The second question, Chairperson, I just want to understand from the estimates point of view, the consultants. How much do you spend? The department spends on consultants, and for what reason do you have to have consultants? I just want to know that. That's the last one, Chairperson. There is called lease payment. Where are you leasing these properties, and how much are you paying for them? Those are my three questions, Chairperson. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And then we go to the honourable sir.
Thanks, Chairperson. Almost 70% of UCS budget goes to compensation of employees. Can the department say with confidence that we are getting value for money? That's question number one. Question number two, can the department provide the details of how the 45 million rand allocated to the remand detention rand will be utilized? The last one, Chairperson, the third one. The attackers that have been set up insofar as reducing assault to 2.2%, unnatural death to 0.02%, and for escape to 0.034%. Chairperson, the worry that I'm having is that it seems as if we are planning for the escape. If we say 0.034%, is that what we are planning? It's a big worry. See, we go further by saying that 2011-2012. 60 inmates escaped, and planning for 54 escapes in 2012-2013, meaning that only 6 that are not going to escape. It's a big worry. If they can explain this to me. I'm just a layman, so I'm asking this question in this way. Thanks,
Chair. All right. The time is going to catch up with us, so we really can think about this as quick as possible. But if you're staying here longer, I'll be happy as possible. Can somebody talk to us? One greater question is the budget allocation for reservation seems to be low, meaning that maybe we're skimming on the services there. And then she's asking the question.
That these halfway houses that we're talking about, what is our plan? Are we budgeting just for the brick and mortar? Are we budgeting for the caretaker that's going to be in there? What are we budgeting for? Because she talks about there's a plan for 20 halfway houses. So if you don't have money allocated for it, but you are saying you're going to build 20 of them or establish 20 of them, where are you going to fund this from? I think that's what Mamungwenya is asking. Halfway houses? Yes, sir?
Thank you, Chairperson. Halfway houses, Chairperson, in the Republic of South Africa is not a new concept. What we also are saying is that there are established halfway houses that are run completely by NGOs. What the department has done in changing that situation was that it had then taken a policy decision to have halfway houses that are run on the basis of a partnership with the NGOs. Now, we have established one on the 24th of February in Naturena in Johannesburg. The idea is that, Chairperson, in each and every region, we shall have a halfway house established in the course of this financial year. But also, Chairperson, looking at the categories that we are saying needs to be treated differently to the male composition of our offenders, talking about young offenders who do not have any support system, female offenders who can be released and be kept in halfway houses, and people with disabilities and the elderly. Those are the categories that we would like to, who have reached their qualifying date to be placed out, that they be placed in these halfway houses. And therefore, Chairperson, we are saying the launch that that we had was to indicate our preparedness and willingness to start this policy change. And we will then be taking it to other regions as well and seeing whether we cannot do that more and more, so as we can also reduce some of the challenges we have with regard to offenders who do not have support systems in place. I think, Chairperson, the question that the Honourable Member is also raising is with regard to the budget. Chairperson, yes, we are aware of the situation in which we are. What Correctional Services needs, Chairperson, is a complete overhaul and transformation of community corrections. Firstly, the training of officials that is not up to the required level and standard that would like. All of our official chairperson have been trained in matters of security, but not in matters of monitoring offenders that are placed in community corrections. And that is what we would like to have, because we experience has shown to us that these offenders, chairperson, some of them, it is indicated that they have attended pre-release programs, only to find that part of the pre-release program was presented to offenders, and as they get released, there is still that need for pre-release program. So we need to strengthen that. But secondly as well, post-release, post-placement, we have to deal with stigmatization, we have to deal with family feuds, we have to deal with peer pressure. And that support that correctional officials who are doing monitoring needs to provide to offenders who are placed in the community, that's what we need to do as a department. And that is going to be the focus of this department this current financial year with regards to the complete overhaul of our community corrections function. Because, Chairperson, what we want to establish is community corrections must function so as to inspire confidence in the judiciary that more and more people are diverted away from our correctional facilities, thereby reducing our levels of overcrowding. And part of our budget is in HRD, where we are going to utilize it for the training and capacitation of our officials who will be doing the monitoring, where we have seen that most of the work that they do is to police rather than to assist with the successful reintegration of our offenders. So that is our focus, Chairperson, in overhauling that system of community corrections. Thank you.
Mam Gwenya is saying that is just wishful thinking, because whilst we agree with all those things you're talking about, you don't have enough money to do it. I think that's the question that she's raising. So it's no use saying that these are the things we want to do, and when we ask you, why are you not doing them, you'll say, because we don't have the budget to do it. And then maybe somebody must explain to us, the halfway houses, this concept that you're saying you're in partnership with NGOs. NGOs are getting their money from you and from other people as well. What is it that we are contributing towards the halfway houses? When I say we, I'm saying DCS. Are we contributing the counseling skills? Are we contributing the warm body that looks after it? What are we contributing so that we can answer Mam Gwenya's question? Because if you're saying you want 20 of them, your budget should reflect that you're going to have funds for those 20, whether it's for the salary and wages of the people or whatever the case is. We don't quite understand what is your role in these halfway houses. Somebody can explain that to us in terms of financial commitment or even warm body commitment for that. So Okay.
In terms of the future plan, Chairperson, as my colleagues was explaining that we launched one in the natural arena. That one was a pilot. It was a pilot. Because of that one was successful. And then what we have engaged, by the time that pilot took place, the budget cycle were already passed. Okay. As I'm speaking here, Chairperson, yesterday I was with a meeting with the Treasury, talking about all these future plans, to say, because we did not have any chance now, can they accommodate us about this commitment for the future? Because they already, Chairperson, knows about these pilots. We are engaging as I'm speaking right now. By the time the budget cycle comes, we already know what are we going to do and how much we will be having. That's what are we doing at the moment, Chairperson, in terms of that.
For this financial year, how many halfway houses are you going to establish? If any, none. Are there any that we're going to establish the financial year so that Mam Gwenya can be happy that we're talking here about 748. Is that sufficient for the 20 halfway houses, I think, is what Mam Gwenya is asking. Is that sufficient for the warm bodies to both be trained and monitored that Umodisa is talking about? I think that's the question. Because we're agreeing with the strategy. Just do we have the money for it?
Probably, Chairperson, if one can highlight exactly what is our talk with Treasury, it's not only the commitment for over NTF, it's also if they can accommodate us during the budget estimates to say, okay, fine, because the budget cycle we did not meet during the budget estimates, so that we can able to fund the other six that we already targeted. There are another six that we are already targeting, Chairperson.
All right, Mam Gwenya, to answer the question, we don't have funds for 20, but as the funds come, we will continue to develop.
Sorry, Chair. Yes. I just want to ask something regarding this budget house. Yes, what is the square meterage of the one that you have built? What was its total construction cost? And what was the cost of the land? The Chairperson, if you have a budget of 748 million rand to put up these halfway houses, and I think you are planning how many? 20?
Six.
Chairperson, dan is daar groot gemors. Because the pictures that I have seen on TV one day does not tell me that that house can cost you a million rand. I gone. Secondly, Chair, what are we doing to use inmate labor with a bit of supervision to put up these houses? What are we doing to try and involve the private sector? For example, the major building material houses in the country, Cash Built and Buildit and those people, to perhaps give you the materials at a heavily subsidized price, or even in certain instances sponsor a house. Are we doing enough public relations work to try and get these things done? But Chairperson, I can never agree that 748 million rand is required to put up six in the current in this financial year. Then there's something greatly wrong. For 748 million, Chair, I will give you a whole township.
No, let's correct that. What was said is that there's training and everything else. It's not exclusively for the halfway houses. It's for everything else, not exclusively for the halfway houses.
But then what is the everything else, Chair?
Correct. No, that's why I'm saying that maybe what you need to do, Mr. Mojica, is to give us a funding model of one of your halfway houses, so that we can take it and extrapolate it by six. That's that on average we buy the land, or on average we rent it or lease it or something, because here we'll be going to and fro. On the halfway houses, so that we get a sense. Because Mom Gwenya's concern is different to Baba Abrams's one. Abrams is saying you've got too much money. Mom Gwenya is saying you don't have enough money to do justice to reintegration.
Maybe it's a follow-up sentence.
I've got three others, Mom, and it's late, but besides, because the follow-up, or maybe ask you a follow-up and then they will respond.
Yes, Chapter, I want them to respond on, because now there's a question on me. If they're saying a halfway house is a pilot project. Pilot project is Chapter 10, it must have, we need to have a report.
Mm-hmm.
And we must know which this pilot project is going to be there for how long. Since that we mustn't have a challenge like a nutrition, it was a pilot project. And we agreed that we must have that a pilot project. And today, this pilot project doesn't have a time frame when it's going to be finished. So same apply as this one, Chapter 10. Since that we mustn't make another mistake of reviewing and reviewing the project. We need to get a thoroughly report from the department on this project, Chapter 6. If we are not doing like that, I don't believe that we are going to have these halfway houses nationally. Thank you, Chair.
All right. Can you guys respond? I think you don't have to respond verbally. If you can, it's fine. I'm suggesting that you guys come back and give us the funding model.
Mm-hmm.
Even if you take the pilot project and say, look, mm-hmm. this is the kind of funding model, and on average it's going to cost us R1 million. 800 rand from us, 200 rand from the public sector, or whatever the case might be, so that we can then monitor and say, if that is it, and I agree with Mom Gwenya, it can't be a pilot project forever. At some point, you have to look at this pilot and fine-tune it, and then make it work. So can we get something in writing from you guys? Even we know it's not going to be with all the architects, but I'm sure we're going to raise it in the budget, either in support or against these things. We are affording an opportunity until the second to be able to say these are the things, so that when we discuss it, because I'm sure even Mr. Viewer will talk about it herself, about these kinds of things. So please give us information so that we can either support it or whatever the case might be.
Chairperson, maybe just very short. This is a pilot. We will have to sit down and
evaluate, get
a report, provide it to the National Commissioner, to the Minister, to the Committee. But what I can assure the Committee about is the halfway house in Naturena. It is a public works house, which was previously allocated to correctional services, which then our officials did not stay there anymore. And what we had to do was just to do a refurbishment of that house. So we didn't pay for the land and the house. What we did pay for was to do the maintenance work, because that house was dilapidated and extremely damaged. So that's what we did. And to assure, again, the portfolio committee is that a bigger chunk of what was put into the budget of that house came from established business. There are a lot of donations that were made by business in this project, Chairperson. So we will be able to provide that breakdown so that the portfolio committee can then also take note once we have done everything, Chairperson. Thank you.
More than information, at least you get the sense of our sentiment that it should be a partnership more than anything else. Yeah, because it's not going to be a one size fit all. The halfway house in Durban is not going to be the same price as the one in Kimberley. What has happened to the suspensions that are greater than 30 days? Those people reincorporated. I think that was the question Mr. Max asked. I'm not sure if there's a page reference, Mr. Max, but there are suspensions that are greater than 30 days. What has happened to that?
Now, it was 24
questions. 20. 20. 20. Can somebody respond to it? Sir, I request that we be given time, because I don't have the information as I speak in terms of responding to this question. I don't know if my commissioner yes, because we have actually historical data there, Chair, that is talking about a number of people suspended and the number of days that people have been suspended exceeding 30 days. We also have a number of days averaged. So it's a lot of information that is needed that must be broken down, which we have not done when I look at our APP.
No, let's put it in a different manner.
What is the department saying? What is your benchmark for suspension? Let's forget historically, because that's what we're going to talk about. What are we saying? You see, they're not saying it because they are being gentle. We can't have people suspended for years. Not correctional services. Government is beginning to say this. And the question is, where are you putting in to that government sentiment that we can't have people suspended for years? I think that's the real question. Where are you putting in and what are you doing about it? Because it's not acceptable. And if you don't have it as a performance indicator, then we are suggesting that you begin to think about it. That's all that we are saying. How are you going to, because you're one of the serial offenders in that regard, how are you going to begin to get to a situation where suspensions are reduced and what plans do you have? I think that's the real question. Commissioner.
Chair, on the issue that you're raising, correctly so, the department needs to have an audit of all the suspensions and categorize them in terms of where they are, why are they taking long. Some may need a long investigation period. You cannot have one yardstick measuring a multiplicity of suspensions. But indeed, where we need to be compliant with the law, we need to be compliant. But indeed, the question that begs to be responded by us is that we need to give you a sense as to this is a matrix of all the suspensions, how long, why. And if it has been unlawfully long, we need to find measures to put in place to readdress this problem. But wherein there is continuous investigation, like the ones wherein people are involved in criminal activity and there's investigation taking place, suspensions will be longer. But we cannot have a blanket approach to this. Therefore, I request that we give the responsibility to the CDC to have an audit and be able to provide us with a very high level response to this matter. It makes much, much easier for everybody.
Yesterday we did indicate, and maybe we should indicate it to you, the reason why we're doing this is for us to formulate our approach to the budget on the 16th. So you have this opportunity of influencing it. I think without that, I'm sure Max is going to stand up and say it's unnecessarily long, it's unnecessarily expensive, because we have our own researchers, and our researchers can only work on the information we have. So it's really an opportunity for you to influence it. So when we agree that we'll give you time to go and do something, understand that in the absence of that, we will report as we see it. Okay. Can you talk to us about the what do you mean when you say that you're going to reduce gang activity by 10%? I think is what Mr. Max is asking. You're saying the image tracking system, body scanning, you're only using 90% or 80% of it. Can we just talk to those things quickly? Time is really against us. If you guys can be very quick, and then it's maybe three or four more. But why reduce gang by 10%? What do you mean when you say reduce it by 10%?
Chairperson, thank you again for the opportunity. I think our security program, security outputs are actually based on reality. And reality is that there are gangs in our South African correctional system. And these gangs are operating daily. Now, what we are saying here is we are taking cognizance of the fact that the gangs are operational in our facilities. We are starting to put in place plans to reduce the activities of gangs. Our objective is not to have any gang activities in any of our facilities, but the reality is that they do operate. Now, we want to reduce them as per quarter going forward, including chairperson assault, including death in detention. and deaths that are unnatural, because chairperson, assaults and deaths do happen in our facilities. And most of the assaults are as a result of gangs having had attacks on another gang, a rival gang, and as a result of that, offenders being stabbed to death. So what we have put in here is not that we are making provision for any assault. Correctional services, leadership, and all staff is that there should be no assault of any offender in any of our facilities. But because of the fact that there are times when we have to intervene, when two opposing gangs fight one another, it happens that there are offenders that get hurt, that get assaulted. And as a result of that, Chairperson, we as a department are saying, for us to be able to deal with this effectively, because if you could see our statistics last year, Chairperson, there has been a significant increase in gang activities, in assaults, and as a result of that, we cannot come and say, reduce gangs 100%, because it's something that we will never be able to achieve. So our targets, as we have put them there, Chairperson, are based on reality. And what is it that we are trying to do? Chairperson would remember that we came to this portfolio committee and informed me that we do have a strategy. What we have now done is we have a national gang structure and regional gang structure that have been established to deal with gangs as they appear in our country, in the region. What is important as well is to know that the gangs in the Western Cape operate differently to the gangs in Gauteng and differently to the gangs in KwaZulu-Natal. So regions have to customize the strategy in such a manner that they are able to deal with anything that can happen in a correctional facility. What these targets, Chairperson, are indicating to us is that we want to significantly reduce all gang activities. That would assist us by identifying first the gang leaders, isolating the gang leaders, and then putting in place services. For instance, Chairperson, what happens in our facilities most of the time, apart from the fact that offenders are not being kept, all of them busy, there's a lot of inactivity, idleness in most of our facilities. And that is what we want to root out. We want to increase offender labor, increase as well offender participation in our different programs. We understand, Chairperson, that we will not be in a position to reach that now. But we have a plan and a strategy in place to address that.
I just want to say that, or propose, that with this previous request of Chris to come and explain the extent, that we got also together the strategy outline what they going to do to address that.
So you're drawing your question at the point.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, why are we using only 50% of the body scanners? You still want to have the question?
Chairperson, the body scanning equipment, we are in the process of procuring that. Now, what we have done is we have identified our hotspot correctional center, your Paul Smoore, your Johannesburg, your Westville. What we are going to do is, with the little budget that we have, we want to be able to have body scanning equipment installed in those facilities. And as we get a better budget in the MTF period, ours is now to ensure that all correctional facilities, especially where we have gang activity, do have body scanning equipment installed in all of those facilities. The equipment, Chairperson, comes in different designs, different sizes, so the department must make sure that in acquiring that, we get the best equipment to be able to, when Modise passes a door, clearly it can be seen that Modise is having a weapon or is having something in it that is not supposed to be having. So we're trying to look into the market and find out what is it that we can acquire to assist us in reducing these levels of gangsterism. Thank you, Chairperson.
Okay, Mr. Mack, you talked about policies for cities. You still remember what you said on the policy? I didn't capture it very well. Do you remember that?
Yes, Chairperson. The Honorable Member was asking why would we say that at the outer year we would have reviewed not 100%, but I think it was 90%. 80%. Yes, Chairperson. We are currently busy, Chairperson, in reviewing all of our policies and standard operating procedures. And as a result of that, Chairperson, these policies and procedures have to be approved. And the approving instances, Chairperson, on submission, there are a number of questions that get asked, which we have to respond to. We're trying to be realistic with regard to what we would be able to achieve, because it is time-consuming to craft policies and standard operating procedures, which are important, very much so, to ensure that the Department of Correctional Services operate uniformly throughout the country.
That's fine.
Commissioner, you came to this committee maybe 2 or 3 months ago, and you said to us, please don't be surprised or don't fight with us, because we are not going to have an HQ, because DPW is not playing ball. And we were very angry, because we had taken the decision in October last year, remember, September. But however, in your budget, you've allocated 3 million rand for headquarters relocation. And I think Baba Ndlovu is saying, why are you allocating money for HQ relocation today? And yet you came to us some time ago and you said to us, this thing is not going to happen. Is there not a contradiction? I think that's his question.
Chairperson, the figure of 3 million, bear in mind that when you took that decision in October last year, we were banking confidently on the relationship and the discussions that we've had with Public Works. And we take you on the fact that currently in the facility where we occupy, we're paying a certain amount of money. And if we're to move out of that facility, we need to have a sense of the budget and the costs associated with the facility. And we made our calculation that if we are paying now on a projected form, in the lease that we pay around 2 to 3 million per annum, per month, it is fair enough that once we move to a new facility, we need to budget much better. What we are saying that the 3 million that we are having here is been put here as a contingency, because when we started doing a project planning and the budget that we have here, it was at a time when it was very clear that Public Works is not coming to the party. And we needed to have something that in the event we are unable to move, we still have money that we are going to be putting into the process. Bear in mind any facility, because if you want a first grade facility, office block, there are certain parameters of payment that you make. And the 3 million is based on what you call a first grade lease option. That's what you may pay per square meter per month. You may pay for the facility every month. But this is not an absolute number. We are saying to ourselves when we reported that this option already has its own problems. We are looking at means as to how we can mitigate the risk of staying in that facility, which is a risk in itself, to have a new functional facility available to us. So the figure that you have there is indicative in the sense that we want to have not be caught without a number, especially in terms of financial obligations that we may have to find ourselves. So 3 million is just a number in the event portions of the building have to move to a new facility. Because for the moment, there is no way, because the target that we had set ourselves with you is that by December, November this year, we shall be out of that facility. So there may be components of the department that may relocate, because we have no space, to an area where in the meantime, while we deal with the issues of a new facility, we do have a budget to pay for their day-to-day maintenance. But as we speak, we are looking at means of getting other agencies of state to help us to ameliorate this problem. We have a problem. We did report to yourselves. When we were speaking about the nutrition contract, the minister, deputy minister, did indicate that Public Works is in ICU, and we don't see this thing happening now. So we need to think very creatively that we need to find an agency that is going to help us. Thank you.
What is the 1.2 billion rand? Oh, 1.6 billion rand for leases. What are we leasing? Anybody wants to answer that question?
Thanks, Chairperson. Chairperson, the 1.604 billion for leases is allocated as follows. Accommodation charges, which covers rental to be paid to DPW for all government buildings utilized by correctional services, is 828 million. Leases, which for private purposes for offices utilized by community corrections, regional and area management offices, 71,352,000. And then also included there, Chairperson, on the 1.6 is municipal services, that are to the amount of 704,647,000. That is for water and light payments to municipalities, Chairperson.
Say that again.
Municipality services here, what that I have is 704 million for water and light payment.
Yeah, your document talks about this thing called transfers and subsidies that I don't understand, and
I'm making a commitment now, Commissioner, that I'm going to talk about it in the budget, so I'm going to understand it. But I don't understand this thing about subsidies and transfers. For me, it's a slush fund. Because if you look at that one, it talks about 5914 around province and municipalities. That's what I'm asking you. When you're raising province and municipalities, why are you talking about it in the 1.6 billion and yet it's got its own line item somewhere down the line there under subsidies and whatever?
That was my question.
Are you with me?
That's the first question.
So it can't be part of the lease and it's a standalone line item.
No, it
and it's a standalone. Baba, Sokela, one day I want you to come and talk to me about transfers and subsidies. I know Marita tried to explain this thing to me. I failed to understand this thing, Mama. You guys must come and explain to me what does this thing mean so that when I discuss it in the budget, I understand what does this thing mean. But I think Dobu's question is, what makes up the 1 billion rand leases? You are saying it's for stuff that we are leasing from DPW. All of it. What is the rest of it?
If I may, as Mr. Modise has indicated, the earmarked funding that you get from National Treasury for the payment to public works in terms of accommodation charges, that is all the government buildings that we are occupying, then that money, the earmarked is about 828 million. Then there's about 71 million that is normally leased to landlords for offices, and also for staff accommodation. Staff accommodation is a lesser figure. The greater part of it is for office accommodation, be it at head office, be it at regional offices or community correction offices. Then there's another part for the triple keys, the two current existing triple keys that we conducted to. We're paying the index fee, as you know, and also paying the capital fee, which is the payment for the structure. So for the index fee, in 2012-13, there's an amount of about 720 million that is included in that lease payment, total budget. But the greater part is the earmarked funding. It comes with the allocation data.
Okay. So that makes more sense. So you're saying the cost to the PPPs is in that figure there?
Yes, it is.
Okay. I think that we're not agreeing, but we know that it's an exorbitant figure. We were just worried about it. But I think you guys must read the business day, because today Pravini is saying government lease costs are exorbitantly high.
Yes. 3 billion. Yeah.
If we are contributing 1 billion of the 3 billion rand, then it's in a problem, Commission. I'm hearing you saying 3 billion. But if that is true, 1 billion is us. And I'm saying in today's paper, he's saying, look guys, we rather invest than to lease.
Yeah.
So we can't be quiet on this matter when we sit in our committee. We can't be quiet. We will certainly raise it. So we're just raising that with you. Okay. That was the leases. Hey, Mata, why did I dump this other one? Maybe I was being nice. So that explains the leases. No, Baba Gogo asked the question, what is, you know, we've asked this question many times. Let's just put this thing to you. If you go to this document that you've given us, Commissioner,
you have something called consultants and professional services business and advisory. Consultants and professional services infrastructure. You've got consultants and professional services laboratory. Consultants and professional services legal. Agency support, outsource, blah, blah, blah. Those things, Baba, come to R500 million. Anything between 512 million and 662 million. Anything between 512 and 662 million. And we're not happy with that. We can't have R1 billion consultancy fee. We just cannot. Now, I'm saying this is, we're picking it up from your document. I mean, the obvious question would be, please break down, Sokela, the 76 million and the this and the this and the that. I mean, that would be the obvious thing to do. But we are just raising the fact that if you just add those five line items, 512 million, I'm not sure if somebody wants it. You got the document? Yeah, if you take those last items and you add them up, it comes to about 512, yes, sir.
Anybody, if you need that.
Chairperson, we will provide the breakdown of all those transactions that make the consultant. But what I want to highlight to the portfolio committee that if Chairperson might see, if you adding everything, the consultancy, if you look at the move, looking at if you add all of them, 127 million, as we are speaking, 76 million, there is a drive to reduce them. We even further, Chairperson, if you look, we had the consultancy, which is the consortium of internal audit, of which by now it might be sitting at 9 million, but we said, we right as it is now, we kept it into 7 million, including the cost of the audit committee. Because at the end of the day, we need to live, we need to operate ourselves without this consultant. But we can't just fill in immediately. But we will reduce it, Chairperson.
Thank you. And you have to continuously answer the question. What are these consultants contributing to our
core functions
in terms of the Constitution, in terms of the Act? We can't have consultants just for consultants' sake. Because we asked this question in the beginning. This activity of yours, how does it talk to the Constitution of the country? How does it talk to the Act? And is it not in contradiction to government policy and so on? So, I mean, that for us is very important. 70% of compensation goes to employees. I think that is what Baba Kaila is asking. Now, I know we've had this discussion before, that you're a service provider type of organization and so on. But what is a benchmark? Maybe you guys should help us. What is a benchmark for correctional services, salaries versus hardcore services? Because Kaila obviously is worried about 70% of our budget going to salaries and wages.
Thank you, Chairperson. If one might quote different institutions, let's take, for instance, the Parliament, here in the Parliament. Parliament is a labor-intensive organization. What does that mean? That the bill of the compensation will be higher than anything, because it's a labor-intensive organization. If you take the department like education is a labor-intensive organization. Health is a labor-intensive organization. The trend, if you look in terms of that, between 68% and 72%, it's where the benchmark it is. If you look in terms of the legislature, those are the labor-intensive organizations. Now, if you look in terms of now the correctional services, it's within the norm.
because it's a labor intensive organization as well. So that is what it happened. Chairperson, if you might remember, the members might remember going back to, I think it was 2005, when National Treasury was doing the survey throughout the country, where this norm came into, you say, between 69% to 73%. All those labor-intensive organizations, it's within the norm. So that's what it is, Chairperson.
Right. Well, as I said, we've got our own people that will do our own research on that matter. Then you have a 45 million rand that you are setting aside for remand detention. We're asking, what is the thing that you're talking about? What is the 45 million rand going to buy? We know, and we agree, and it is us that passed the law about remand detention. But we want to know, what is this 45 million that you've got in here? What are you hoping to buy with that 45 million? Are you buying new buildings? Is it to pay salaries over and above this 70% that you're talking about? What is incorporated in the 45 million?
Yes, sir.
Thanks, Secretary. The 45 million is for existing operations from head office down to center level. For head office, the component there is about 12 million, and about 33 million is for the dedicated remand detention facility. We do acknowledge that it is currently not a very clean figure, especially for facilities that are housing both sentenced inmates and awaiting trial detainees. The decision that we took when we were crafting the budget as a department was that if a remand or supposedly remand detention facility, if the percentage of inmates is more towards a sentenced inmate, will not put it in the remand detention facility. But if the percentage of awaiting trials is more than those of sentenced inmates, then we'll put it as part of the RPF. Up until the process has been completely clean, we had also engagement with National Treasury in terms of that principle, which they supported, but we currently in that process of cleansing from head office up until the central level. And also, if you remember, Chairperson, some time ago, we did indicate to portfolio committee that the intention, we're starting at a sub-program level currently, but the intention is that once we finalize all the issues around remand detention, we shall then, in consultation with National Treasury, move from remand detention to be a sub-program, to be a full program on its own, because it is quite involved. But currently the agreement between us and Treasury is that, for now, it is better to have it as a sub-program. Let's do all the processes to cleanse the figures, to come up with models of how we then allocate for mixed facilities. But we cannot, for now, say we can afford to actually move whatever number is greater than the other to other centers that we cannot afford. The part of the capital works program that Mr. Modise is managing, there is a budget allocation that is looking at improving its facilities and ensuring that when you're saying this is a remand detention facility, it is 100% a remand detention facility.
So for now, you guys have identified remand detention facilities, even if it's not full. You'll be able to say to us, these are the 10 in our head that we call remand detention. They might have whatever, whatever. Can somebody just give that to us in writing? Okay, to say, in our understanding as DCS, these are the remand detention centers. And they might not all be 100% remand detention, but we want to know, when we talk about remand detention center, are you talking about Section A? Are you talking about a house somewhere, whatever the case might be? Robert Taylor's final question was...
On the remand detention purposes, maybe we need to add the question that has come up yesterday on the program, that there's no progress for remand detention. Because if we can look at the awaiting trials, some of them, they stay in our center more than 6 years, more than 5 years.
6 months or so.
Yes. And there's no program for them. So if maybe we can get the program that are going to be on place. Thank you.
And this is reiterate, we were told that on average,
awaiting trial, remand detainee, whatever you want to call them, spends 177 days. On average, 177 days. That's about 6 months, on average. Others are 7 years, others are 3 months, but on average they spend 6 months awaiting trial. And the question that is being asked is, shouldn't we be looking at those people differently? Because for 6 months, he's not going to school, he's not doing anything else. So that's the one that you guys maybe must look at, because we're going to discuss it. But the other one that you guys must look at is that 80% of the people that emerge from our facilities are people who were sentenced to less than 2 years. The vast majority of people that come out of prison were sentenced to less than 2 years. And Ms. Moodley, those that are sentenced to less than 2 years don't have any rehabilitation in prison. So we bring them in, we keep them for 2 years, we release them out there, they are wild animals. So we are asking the question, one, if somebody is sentenced to less than 2 years, guys, shouldn't we be lobbying that those guys don't go in the first place? If they go in, what do we do about it? But we are arguing that they shouldn't even go in the first place. Now you guys are serving in that justice cluster, because if the vast majority of people that are coming out have been serving 2 years, we're either going to give them the top priority in terms of rehabilitation, or we are going to make sure that they don't come in at all. But we can't leave them as it is now and expect a different result. Okay. So, I mean, at some point you guys will have to discuss it. We'll certainly raise it. You better discuss it with the minister so that if she is in agreement with us, she can also raise it in the budget. It's part of our lobbying. But we really think there must be alternate sentences, or you take money from somebody that is going to be there for 10 years and give it to for the 2 year guy, because chances are he's coming out. And I think that's the issue. Ubabatele was asking, why are you budgeting for escapes? I suppose you're going to tell us, because the reality is people do escape, isn't it? That's fine. We want to leave and love you there, but we want to ask us 2 questions. Again, it will come with part of the story. You've got in your budget, okay, inventory, food and food supplies. You've moved from 300 million to 700 million. Please explain. That's on page 2 of the document we have. Something called inventory, food and food supplies. Now, we were arguing that everything else was saying that you're down managing your inmates. You're down managing your inmates, but you are escalating the food for them. It doesn't make sense. And especially 700 from 300, it's something that we said we must look at. Also, maybe we should have raised it when Baba Ndlovu raised it. What is property payments? You've got something called, besides the lease, you've got something called property payments that moved from 6 million to 700 million. It's just something that we don't understand. From 6 million rand to 700 million rand in the next year, called property payments, if you can explain that to us. Then you've got rental and hiring. Cost us 30,000 rand this financial year, you're going to 1 million rand next, 2 million rand. Something called rental and hiring. It was 30 in the current year. According to your figures, it's now 1.8 million rand. What is it that you are doing that makes that go up? And then just an explanation, Commissioner. The figures are not necessarily different. We are struggling to understand this line item that you've got for venues and facilities. Because we thought most of the things that you do in your facilities anyway. You pay lease. You pay a lease for whatever. But you've got venues and facilities, 13 million rand. Unless you're saying it's when you go to Gallagher Estates or when you go wherever, we will then maybe suggest that you don't do it at Gallagher Estates. Do it at your own place. But what is 13 million? Huh?
How can they go there if they have capacity?
So that's the point that I'm making here.
Yes.
You've got 13 million rand for venues. If you guys can just explain that to us, so that we don't raise it and raise unnecessary things when we discuss the budget. Having said that, ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much. We have picked up most of the stuff. We'll allow you guys to do the closing. We've picked up most of the stuff, and we're happy just to indicate to you, we're not to be fighting with you, Sokala and Commissioner. You know, somewhere in these reports, and Mareka, you see, in these reports, last year you have a target for bed space 900. Last year. This year, you've got target for bed space 1.5, which is might be 5. But remember, in this year, you've got previous year and current year. In your previous year, you've got no. In other words, what was actual in year one should be previous in year two. These things are not talking to them. All right, they're not. And we're telling you the bed space is one of them. We would have expected at least the bed space for last year to be 900. And now 1.4, whatever. It's not there at all. So we're just saying the integrity of these reports. All right. Thank you very much. We allow you to say something, Baba. I'm saying going forward from here, the process is members are going to go and develop their budget positions according to this discussion. We will write a report according to these discussions. We're debating on the 16th of May. And we're asking for anything that you would want to bring to us to influence the debate or our report must arrive by the 8th of May, which is 27 days before. Okay, so that members can incorporate it into their budget speeches, we can incorporate it in our report that we need to send to Parliament. So we have asked you a whole host of things. If you think of certain things going forward, please bring them to our attention by the 8th of May. Otherwise, we will report as we see. Let us allow Baba Abraham, and then Commissioner, you'll wrap it up, and then we'll go home. Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen. Some of you will probably see next week, but we're seeing NCCF next week.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, you know that great freedom fighter, Gandhiji, said that the weak can never forgive anybody. Forgiveness is the attribute of the strong. We are dealing here with human beings who, for whatever reason, may have gone wrong. I'm disappointed, Chair, that when Mrs. Kreiner tried to explain how they've come to reprioritize things, and I'm reminded here about what the minister had to say regarding the new budget program structure, that it is for better reprioritization within the allocation of resources. But Chairperson, in spite of saying that it is a better reprioritization, from what we see, that is not evident. And we were also made to understand that it was a product of an extensive consultative budget and policy review process. Chairperson, even that has not been evident. And I'm disappointed. I would just like to ask, Chair, you must give us a ruling. I have a number of questions that I would have liked to put for a written response, but I think time constraints, I'm mindful of that. I'm willing to give them to Cindy by the latest Monday morning, if you could give a ruling that the department please respond to it. Now, Chairperson, there's just one or two things that I've always been crowing about. One of them is that when a document is sent bearing the signature of the departmental officials, in this case, the stat plans and things like that, there should be no room left for any errors. And this explanation about how errors came about, It's not acceptable, Chair. We have a sheet to it that we go through whatever documentation bears our signature, or that is to bear our signature, and that it must be impeccable. I don't expect the State Department to do a haphazard job. I want to repeat that once more. Chairperson, the other issue that I would like to place on the record is that nowhere in these documents have I seen any reference, apart from amounts being allocated, to the department's readiness to see to it that comes the end of January 2013, it would be ready at the 7 facilities where we are still contracting out. I don't see that. So what I would like, sir, is the commissioner had asked for our indulgence that he would respond to certain things towards the end. I'm asking him to rather put that in writing, those responses that he was supposed to have given at the beginning of the meeting, and that he also tells us about the current state of readiness, or the current state towards eventual readiness at the end of January. And I if you rule that way, Chair, I will be very pleased if I could make questions available. I've got a number of them. I'm very concerned about the care facilities. I'm very concerned about those people who, for whatever reason, are mentally disturbed. I'm in stress. The fact that you are in an environment like those that we have, I wanted to use the word that it looks as if we are warehousing our people in these facilities. And that's a great concern, Chair. So I would like to put all those things. And finally, Chair, sorry for my language, but who the hell am I to advise? But I would like to tell the Commissioner that I think what I would like to see happen is that the Commissioner, together with his senior management, and also engaging the various civil society initiatives that are involved in looking after the welfare of inmates and what have you, that you folks get together on a periodic basis. Have a one-day workshop or a two-day workshop. And that you come out with a plan, a war plan, about how we are going to move away from this concept of warehousing human beings. That all we are doing here with these budgets is merely, you know, how much money do we have to keep the warehouses running. To something where we can come with a bold plan and say that this plan will require this and that in terms of resources, so that this committee can be placed in a position to put up a case with Treasury, with government, with the security, with the JCPS cluster, to try and reach that objective. I think what we are doing at the moment, Chairperson, is merely carrying on with the status quo and making little cosmetic difference here or there. And I don't think that that is what is required in our country if we are to create a better tomorrow for not only those inmates, but also the young generation of today who must become the fathers and mothers of tomorrow to be an example to them. In conclusion, Chair, you know, this issue, I respect what Mr. Modise had said. And I look forward to this gentleman that Advocate Max has spoken about gangsterism. But you remember, Chair, that I lost my cool in Cirrus when I saw those tattoos on certain people. And I even went to the extent that, you know, you deserve not only to be here, but you deserve to be here and you should be locked up and the keys should be thrown away. It just shows how the mind has been corrupted of some of these inmates. But again, as a human being, we have to forgive them for their wrongdoing. There are circumstances that may have led them to it. But, Chairperson, we need to work slavishly on this issue of gangsterism. Because it is connected with prostitution outside, it is connected with drugs, which is ravaging our societies. I mean, you have people going on the march and all sorts of things. There are a minority of people that are making money out of the misery and putting into misery the future generation of this country. And we need to come up, Chairperson, with a holistic plan to attack these things. Thank you very much, and thank you for indulging, Chairperson.
You're welcome, sir. On the first point, I think it ties into what we've said, that we are going to start preparing our budget. And clearly, Mr. Abrams is saying that he's got lots of concerns. So I think, Baba Abraham, you need to get these concerns to Cindy, or questions through concerns to Cindy by Monday. We will forward it to the Commission. And hopefully they will alleviate your fears or confirm your fears. But when you start writing your budget speech, at least you would have afforded them an opportunity to tell you otherwise. I mean, that's what's going to happen. Whatever it is that he has, we will make sure that you have an opportunity to either influence one way or the other. Otherwise, that's what he's going to report on public TV the day he presents his budget speech. So, yeah, if somebody gets it by Monday, we'll give it to the department, and hopefully they'll be able to respond so that you can incorporate them into your speech. Or otherwise, if you don't get any response, then you talk on what your concerns are. Then, just to reaffirm that, you know, we had a lot of civil society here yesterday, and they are moaning the fact, Commissioner, that in the absence of this committee, there is no forum where civil society can come and share their experiences and anything. Apparently, there used to be this thing in the past. Maybe Modisha and Moreka would know. But they were saying in the past, there used to be something where they could sit and everybody, all of them, and together you guys can do something. They are asking that you guys reinstitute that thing, that you just find a regular forum where you invite them and discuss whatever you want to discuss, whether it's parole or something. So, and I think that's what Abraham is talking about. And I think it'll help take away the first agenda item that we had, if that forum was there, because that's where you process it. I've spoken to the written responses to questions. The final thing that we are putting, Ms. Shine has gone, unfortunately, and yourself. We, Commissioner, are requesting that future performance, anything future that has targets, that your targets are based on outcomes and not on inputs. It's very difficult to measure the effectiveness if you say, we will send so many people to training. We're really not interested in how many you're sending to training. You must say to us, at the end of the day, there will be 10 engineers. That is more meaningful to us. Currently, your targets are based on inputs, and we are saying it makes life very difficult. The fact that there are 10 people that have gone to school doesn't tell us how many of them are now literate. It's better for you to say, this year, there are 10 people that have become literate. So we are asking that your targets move from input to outcomes. It's too late now, but I suppose in everything else, if you guys can do it that way, because then we are able to see how much impact you're having. And that is on behalf of the committee that they spoke about yesterday. I hope I've represented the committee on most issues that were discussed. Commissioner, it's up to you. Over to you. And when you finish the meeting, we'll have a chat.
Thanks, Chairperson. We sincerely, as always, appreciate this engagement with yourselves. Every meeting is a point of reference. It's different from the other. This engagement will continue to be so, and we have taken copious notes. We have learned as a team that there are things that we need to do much better. We want to appreciate the comments, the criticisms, but sincerely so, we also want to appreciate the fact that civil society wants to work with us. There should be no contradiction in this respect. We'll go back and huddle together and devise a plan wherein we have what you call a forum with civil society so that we can have engagement with them on a quarterly basis or in the basis that we shall mutually agree upon. With regards to the forthcoming budget vote, we hope and trust that we shall be in a position to respond to the issues that are raised with us. In the event that we don't fulfill perhaps your expectations, it's not without any malice. but it's because we might not have all the information at our fingertips, and we don't want to supply you or provide you with incomplete information. Where that happens, we shall indicate so that you can bear with us. We want to thank your leadership. We want to thank the committee for providing us with the engagement that we had, and also the presence of civil society here. We want to thank the committee, and thank you very much, Chairperson.
Tomorrow, we are expecting the old assembly to be 24 for a presentation by the Absolute Planning Commission.